Chat with Traders, episode 50.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
Okay, what's up, team? We've made it to episode 50, so first of all, welcome to the Big 5-0, and second, a big thanks for joining me. Now, you may recall for episode 25, which was almost 6 months ago now, I invited Zach Hurwitz back onto the podcast to grill me about my own trading progress. Well, we're obviously another 25 episodes on now, so I thought it'd be a good point to check in with you and give another update on how I'm tracking. So, Zach joins me again for this week's episode. Just a quick intro, Zach originally appeared on the podcast for episode 11, where he shared a great deal of insight into how he uses VWAP, being the volume-weighted average price, at the core of his trading strategy. He's also become a very good friend of mine since we first met at the beginning of this year, 2015, and has personally helped me a great deal with my own trading. During this episode, you'll find the first part is mostly Zach asking questions for me to answer, then we switch it up and the later part is me asking questions for Zach to answer. Just to add on that, pretty much every question asked during this episode has been crowdsourced. So if you contributed a question last week, then there's a very good chance you'll hear it asked at some point during this episode. As you may have already seen, this is a pretty extensive episode. It runs much longer than normal. So if you make it all the way to the end, then props to you, and I totally understand if you need to break this up and don't listen to it all at once. Two things, just quickly, before we get into it. I know we have a lot to get through. Zach is again offering a free 30-minute one-on-one coaching session to any trader listening who is, of course, serious and feels as though they could really do with some help. A very generous offer, and if you'd like to take him up on it, then send Zach an email. His address is tradingcoachz@gmail.com. And the second point I'd like to add is if you have any questions or comments for Zach or myself, just go to chatwithtraders.com/50, scroll to the bottom of the page and drop a line in the comments area. Both Zach and I will be keeping a close eye on this to respond to anyone and look forward to interacting with you there. So that's chatwithtraders.com/50. All right, let's get into it. I'm your host, Aaron Fifield. As you already know, this is the Chat with Traders podcast, and please welcome my guest for episode 50, Zach Hurwitz. All right, and we're recording. Zach, what's going on, man? How are you?
Doing good, Aaron. Thanks so much for having me back on the podcast, and congratulations on 50 awesome episodes. I should say 49, a little anticipatory that this one's going to be so good.
Yeah, I mean, we've just reached 500,000 downloads, 500,000 downloads. So that's it's a pretty cool milestone to hit. And I mean, thank you to everyone listening. I just want to really put that out there because I, you know, obviously appreciate the support and everyone listening in. Yeah, it's a cool milestone to hit.
I love how nonchalant you are that you're like, yeah, 500,000 downloads. It's pretty cool, guys. You know, I have 600 Twitter followers, Aaron. Come on, let's talk. 500,000 is a giant number. You should be really excited about that. I know everybody is thrilled for you, not only the success, but the fact that you've got – I mean, where do you go from here? I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but in 50 episodes, you've already covered so much ground.
Yeah. I mean, I've got plenty great guests lined up, especially in the early part of 2016 already. So, yeah, we've still got a long way to go. But, yeah, I mean, fill us in on what's been happening since episode 25 when you were last on the podcast.
Well, I started using this new website called Twitter.com. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's pretty big these days. The kids are using it. And just developing my own site, thevwap.com. And go check it out. We're going to be launching in 2016 with a recorded course and plenty of other great VWAP material, as you might imagine. Just keeping busy. Believe it or not, I'm still receiving like 5 to 10 emails a week from traders from the episode that I did with you back in March of this year. So it's been 9 months. I still get 5 to 10 emails a week. I mean, I'm thrilled, though. I'm glad that what I say has resonated with so many people. So I'm sure you feel the same way, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really good to hear. So I mean, so episode 50, last time we spoke was episode 25, and I sort of gave a bit of an update on where I was at with my trading, some of the goals I was hoping to achieve, and just some of the things I've been learning. And we also, you know, asked you a few questions as well. So this time for episode 50, we're going to do something similar, but we've crowdsourced a lot of the questions. So I sent an email out earlier this week, and I've had an overwhelming response of questions. Hopefully I can answer the questions you guys have been asking. So, Zach, I know you've got a bunch of questions that are aimed at me over there. What's first on the list?
Yeah, well, the question on everyone's mind since episode 25. Last time you were aiming to have an automated strategy within 6 months. Have you reached this goal?
The short answer is no, not quite. I have covered steady ground on it. I'm not at a level where I'm trading an algorithm. It's not automated. I don't have a profitable strategy ready to deploy into the market. I'm still quite a way away from that stage. But in saying that, I mean, I have really been digging into the code over the last 6 months and just really building my knowledge up on how to program. I have created a few basic algorithms that do work, and you know, they have all the functionality there. They're not algorithms that would be worthwhile trading though, but they're a good starting point, a good base to kind of build from. Yeah, so that's the short answer.
Yeah, I'm sure, like you're saying, you've learned so much from just creating any system. It doesn't even have to be anything close to your actual thesis about how to trade, but learning even a moving average cross or breakout to new highs, some basic strategy will teach you so much about coding and identifying a lot of these systems. What do you think has caused you to, like, you know, not quite reach the goal that you set? Is there anything that held you back?
Yeah, I mean, probably was slightly naive in thinking I could learn how to program and then use that programming knowledge to code or script and a profitable strategy.
Are you separating there? You're separating that, like, learning the trading and learning the coding are two totally different, like, paths of learning.
Essentially, yeah, because, I mean, to go in the algorithmic direction, you do need to have a pretty solid understanding of how to program. You also need to then identify a strategy that can be programmed, because the strategy or the type of setups that I was trading kind of earlier this year and later last year are quite difficult to program. I mean, that's one of the things I learned as well, was because those types of strategies were very visual, as you know, things such as like horizontal support and resistance are very hard, well, for me at this level, are quite hard to
identify and track a prior support level or prior swing low or swing high.
Yeah, definitely. So, one of the things I have learned is that there's quite a big difference in the type of strategies that can be used discretionarily and those that can be used in a quantitative, more systematic way. So, I mean, that was probably one of the things, is just a bit naive on how steep the actual learning curve was. I also questioned myself quite a lot over the last 6 months about whether I was doing the right thing, whether learning, you know, Python scripting language was the right direction. But I know there's easier ways to achieve the goal of, you know, systematic automated trading. For some reason, they just didn't really appeal to me, and Python really stood out, and I just felt like it was a more valuable skill to have in the long run. I mean, some of the other things I was considering was, you know, obviously going back to, you know, languages like ThinkScript, or maybe I should have been using something like TradeStation. You know, they've also got their easy language. The cool thing about Python is it's open sourced, so you can use it on any platform. You're not limited in that regards. And I guess probably the other reason which I found a bit challenging, was it kind of time constraints. Because, I mean, you know, I'm not trading full time, which means I need to try and find an income in other areas, which means that I've still been doing the occasional graphical web design job. As much as I hate it, you know, it's money coming in. So, you know, I've had that. I've been running the podcast. You know, you've also got your personal life away from the computer as well.
You have a personal life?
Yeah, there's a small one there.
Oh, my God. I missed out. I forgot. Yeah. I was going to give you a hard time. I was going to say, what the hell else have you been doing with your time, Aaron? It's not like you have a podcast or anything to run.
Yeah. So one of the things I've, you know, I think it's good that I can identify what's been holding me back. Well, not holding me back, but what's slowed my progress a little bit. I don't know if that's even the right word, but
remember when we talked about this, I think a couple of months back when you were deciding between the languages, you made a really good point about back testability, that whatever strategy you're trying to code or identify or eventually employ or deploy is our favorite word for algo trading, right? Deploy it. You'd said Python and I know TradeScript. This is one advantage they both have. TradeStation's easy language versus ThinkScript. One advantage that Python and TradeStation have over ThinkScript is that they're back testable. They're easy to kind of vet the strategy on the fly. Did that factor into the kind of delay?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because I know it would have been easier for me to maybe use something like TradeStation, but I think I try to look at things in a very big picture. I think I might have mentioned this last time. And I think in the long run, knowing an open-sourced programming language that's a lot more versatile has pretty much the only limitation to it is your own creativity, is going to be more valuable in the long run. Yeah, and I mean, one of the things, I mean, I was coding earlier today for a few hours before we got on the call here, and I was, you know, just running a few back tests, and you could just see you'd, you know, obviously hit the back test button and it would draw out the equity curve, you know, over the period that you were back testing a strategy. And some of these strategies, they just, you know, they spike up at the beginning and then that for the next, you know, let's say 3 years that you're back testing, it's just going down, 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 just keeps going down. And it's just really cool to see that. And I think that is quite powerful because, you know, what I was back testing was a strategy that some people will be trading that, or some people will be trading something very similar, but they've never back tested it. They're kind of trading blind in some regards. So it was just, I think there's a lot of power in being able to see just how that performed in the past. Even if it's not going to perform exactly like that in the future, you know right then and there that that's not something you're going to continue to trade.
It's like there's three levels of awareness. There's the people who are like not aware at all of anything resembling an equity curve for their strategy. There's people who have an idea but haven't gotten the equity curve yet. And then there's people who have the equity curve. So being able to see it, I think that's a great point, that there are people putting this into practice who don't know their numbers, but you're seeing almost like the, you know, the fabric of the fates. You're seeing someone's life, you know, that they don't know that they're about to undertake, right? Now, obviously, not every trading record with a given strategy is going to be the same. You'd have to Monte Carlo it to see exactly how many different permutations there are and how many different potential paths with the same trading report. Have you gotten into Monte Carlo backtesting by chance for anyone who's listening who might be interested in Aaron's experience with Monte Carlo?
Very little. Very little is the short answer. That's definitely something I'm keen to explore, you know, in the months going forward. I have done some basic Monte Carlo work in Python, mainly following tutorials, but, you know, that's all been really helpful as well. That's definitely something I'm going to need to learn and dig into a lot more going forward, though.
For anyone who's wondering, I'll give a, like, super cursory explanation of Monte Carlo. Imagine you had 100 trades, but you took them in a different order. So they all have the same outcome of the last 100 trades of yours that we're examining, but they came in a different order. What if all your winners came at the beginning or all your winners came at the end? That would dramatically affect how your, you know, sort of net output at the very end of the 100 trades, you know, would come out to. Monte Carlo scrambles those trades and their order hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of times and gives you a kind of best and worst case scenario, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think if anyone actually wants to look at that a little bit more, Phil Lawrence.
Exactly, link them to Phil's article, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That article, I mean, many of you have probably already read it. It's called The Numbers You Wish You Knew About Your Trading. He's got a great explanation that actually hits on Monte Carlo in that, as well as some good visualizations and screenshots of tests he's done. So, yeah, that'll go into that a little bit more. So, what other questions have we got on the list there, Zach?
Sure. Well, one question that I think a lot of traders would want to hear about from you is, like, by nature, what type of trader are you?
Yes.
And, you know, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the type of trading that I'm naturally attracted to, you know, probably just because that's what I was first introduced to when I got into trading, is swing trading. So that's, and when I say swing trading, holding positions anywhere from a couple days to a couple weeks. I don't really like to hold anything beyond that. Talking like, you know, holding for a couple months, that can get a bit boring. Not really a day trader. That doesn't really appeal to me too much. Although in saying that, my goal with, you know, moving in the algorithmic trading direction is to have strategies that operate on a number of time frames, and one of those time frames would most definitely be intraday strategies. So I'd like to layer it with, you know, a couple intraday strategies, a couple swing trading strategies, and then maybe even, you know, a couple longer term strategies as well. And I mean, that's something I picked up from speaking with Kevin Davey. I think that was episode 39, is around about that time. And he said that having, you know, like a basket of strategies actually helps you smooth out your equity curve over time as well. So, you know, that was a good takeaway from that interview.
Well, it's a good point that he's making, that you can't build one strategy to solve every type of market. You need a grouping or a kind of cadre, an armory of strategies to apply to a variety of markets. You don't have to apply to every single one. You don't have to have something in your basket for each type of market. You just try and cover as much ground as you can and produce a smoother equity curve, as you're saying.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, I think you're also being a little bit modest, not to give too much away to the listeners, but, you know, you and I have done a little bit of day trading together, actually, and Aaron's being modest. He's a pretty talented intraday trader, but you know, what I think really cool is that you're picking a strategy that fits with your style of kind of your personality, right? You know that you don't want to be impulsive staring at the screen for 8 hours a day. It's not going to fit with all your other obligations. You need something that's automated, more even keeled, maybe a longer term strategy, but not quite investing, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Sure. How do you feel about your progress to date, even though you haven't hit the target you're aiming for? Are you discouraged at all by this?
Well, there's definitely been times over the last 6 months where I have been pretty disappointed, but then I sort of stop and think, right? So I think back to where I very first began. So when I very first decided I was going to start learning how to code, right? I didn't even know what an integer was. I didn't know what a float was. I didn't know what a function, a method. I didn't have any idea. And, you know, I look at what I'm doing, you know, what I've been doing earlier today before we jumped on this call. And, at this point, I've been able to code an algorithm from scratch. You know, admittedly, it is fairly basic, but, you know, it works and it's a good starting base, something to build from there. I've definitely been disappointed with my progress at times, but I think, you know, everything always takes a lot longer than you anticipate that it will. Plus, I mean, the knowledge that I've acquired from doing 25 interviews since we last spoke and recorded it, is huge. I mean, it definitely helps me whether I trade like those traders or, you know, or not. I mean, there's still something I can take away from everyone, and, you know, we're probably going to get into that a little bit more as we go. But, yeah, overall, I think I'm okay with where I'm at. It would be nice, like, I mean, I'm not really actively trading at the moment. Instead of spending, you know, a couple hours after the market closes each day looking at charts and that sort of thing, I find myself still looking at charts, you know, at least a few times a week, but I'm usually spending a good few hours each night learning how to code and program and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different to, I think, most people that I speak to during the week, you know, like people who email me who listen to the show. I think it's a little bit of a different path than what many of those, what many other people decide to take. And yeah, I mean, obviously I just hope I'm doing the right thing.
You realize how this relates to like what other traders experience in their own trading career? They expect it to be, I mean, they set the bar so high, right? They say, all right, well, in 6 months, I'm going to have $1 million acquired from my, you know, proprietary strategy of so-and-so and so-and-so that I'm going to enact 8 hours a day with no failure, with, you know, absolute consistency and total risk management. And on the second day, they screw something up. They go, oh, my God, this is way harder than I thought. We experience failure so frequently in trading because we set the bar for success so ungodly high, right? I mean, look, I didn't want to, like, you know, bark at you on the last interview and say, 6 months, there's no way you're going to get a strategy up and running in 6 months. I wanted to be encouraging. But look, that's an aggressive goal for anyone, even a very, you know, seasoned coder, to go from ground level to tested and implemented that quickly. It can be done, and it can be done in a simplistic manner. But I think, like you're saying, you've learned so much from just doing the basics. It's like owning your first car. You probably learned quite a bit about how to take care of a car from that first vehicle. You know, God rest its soul.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah. All right. So how are you measuring your progress? I mean, are you journaling? Do you spreadsheets? Do you document results? How deep are you into the back tester? Is this more like you're still doing the coursework?
Yeah. So one of the things I kind of like about programming is that it's quite easy to measure your progress. Whereas you're a discretionary trader, you know, just a trader in general, you know, some weeks you're up, some weeks you're down, and it's always up and down. And it's quite hard to know if you're actually getting better, like you're acquiring more knowledge, but are you actually getting better? I mean, with in a programming sense, either it works or it doesn't work. And you start to code things that are slightly more complex. Not to say I'm actually doing anything super complex right now, but things start to gather momentum, I guess, is a way to say it.
You know, a good phrase from Phil that just came to mind, shells. The idea of building a shell that can be used in anyone's script but then applied to another. I know this is more of a kind of proper programming term that I'm, of course, a non-programmer, like kind of learning myself as I'm learning code. But building a shell that you can use, a construct that you might use somewhere else, whether it's, like I said, a moving average cross or a counter of how many bars since an event has occurred. These things can be useful to systems down the road. So building a subcomponent might be valuable even if it doesn't turn into a fully fledged, up and running, deployed system.
Absolutely. I mean, I've found that even over the last couple of weeks, like if I create something, you know, like a new script, I'm often copying and pasting blocks from past scripts into the new one and just tweaking it a little bit to suit. And then obviously adding to that as well. So yeah, and I mean, just to add on that, I have been keeping, I've got like a personal blog. I don't really promote it and put it out there, mainly because there's not really much on it. I've probably been a little bit slack on that. When I was doing a little bit of day trading earlier this year, on demo, I should mention that, I was journaling all my trades on there with screenshots and that type of thing. So I was doing that. It's now sort of turned into a place where I just put important notes that I want to remember about programming. And then also, I'm still obviously looking at charts, you know, quite a few times each week. And I find, you know, the type of setups that I was looking for going back to earlier this year and into last year, I'm still saving those onto what you'd probably call like a watch list. And one of the things which I think is quite beneficial is watching those setups sort of unfold. Okay, so obviously you identify it before the trade signals, but then following it. So following it, it signals whether I take the trade or not. I mean, I've only taken a handful of trades this year. I'll still keep it on my watch list for the next sort of, you know, month or two, just to see how it unfolds, to see how maybe I could have better, you know, just think about how you maybe could have better managed your stops and that sort of thing. I don't think I'm being very clear here, but keeping it on your watch list to watch how it unfolds past whether you took the trade or not. Like, don't just scrap it from your watch list. Keep it on there and see how it progresses and moves.
You know what this is like? This is like doing homework and flipping to the back of the book and looking at the answers instead of doing the work. When you actually watch the setup, I'm serious, when you watch the setup, you're working through the problem, even if you're going to get the answer anyway. You know you're going to get the answers to the test after the test, but it's kind of like, well, I still need to learn how to think about it. Mm. I think that's so cool that you're constantly kind of giving yourself these little mini quizzes of the setups. Did I identify it right? How could I have done this better? Was I early? Was I late? Is my stop too tight? Is it too wide? Et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of thing, I mean, I keep them saved there and it's going to be a big help, you know, continues to be a big help in identifying better setups, better entries, and that sort of thing. Like, there's a lot to be learned from actually following a trade through.
You know, that website that I shared with you guys, and I hope, you know, you go check it out, twitter.com. I'm messing with you guys, obviously. I'm posting a lot of my trades on Twitter because finding trades like that and keeping a record of them that you can go back and look and say, on this date, at this time, this is the opportunity. My God, to be able to document that and aggregate it. Are you saving any like spreadsheets or Excel output of any of the systems?
No, not at this stage. I'm probably not at the level where that would be too beneficial in regards to backtesting. But
sure.
You know, hopefully in the next couple of months, I'll be starting to build up a good backlog of spreadsheets.
You know, there's a great quote I have here in my notes. I think it was from the originators of the C programming sort of suite language. Make it work, then make it right, then make it fast. Like, it's okay if you're just on the make it work part. That's what everyone starts with.
Yeah, that's actually really good. I like that. Because, I mean, some of the, like, the coding I've been doing, I know it's not the most efficient way. And I know it's kind of a little bit rough. But, I mean, it's just first step. Yeah, like exactly like you said, is get it to work and then go through and optimize it.
And get it right, yeah. And then get it fast. Absolutely. By the way, make sure you mistakenly attribute that quote to me and not to whoever said it so that I get credit for it.
Okay? Sure,
Zach
sure.
Hurwitz said this. I'm messing around. I mean, what are you studying and working on at the moment? Are there any resources that you're finding helpful right now? I imagine there are so many traders out there who are like, wait, if Aaron's saying that it's doable, then you're right. It probably is doable. I should go check this out. Where should they start?
Okay, well, I mean, I can share a couple resources that have been really helpful for me in learning Python, and I'm not saying you should go out there and start learning Python, but if you want to, Codecademy has an awesome course on learning, you know, the good fundamentals of the language. It's a very extensive course. It's free, and every different sort of lesson, that's probably not the right word, topic, whatever, you have to actually write out the script. So you're not watching videos, you're not just reading a book. It's very interactive, and it actually makes you write things out before you move on. So that's been helpful. What else? There's been, I've done a couple courses on Udemy. I think one of them was called the Ultimate or Python Bootcamp or something along those lines. That's a really awesome course, so I'd recommend anyone who wants to learn, you know, just the fundamentals of that language. It's not, that'll just teach you, like I said, the fundamentals of the language. It's not going to teach you how to apply it to a trading domain, but you've got to learn that to start before we can go any further. I've also been reading quite a few, you know, quantitative trading books. Inside the Black Box is a really cool book by Rishi Narang. He's actually going to be on the podcast in a couple of weeks' time, so I'm pretty excited about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He'll be really good. His book is really insightful.
Is that something that somebody without any experience in quantitative trading could read and appreciate? Because I remember that feeling of like, I want to buy this book, but I'm going to feel like an idiot if I buy it and look at it and go, I got to Google like half of the words in this book. Is it something that you could get into, or is it kind of over your head, but you're going to try and get more of it over time? Or
it's probably a little bit over my head still, but I kind of just take the attitude. It kind of just feels like sometimes I'm just drinking from a fire hose. Like I'm going to take some of it in. And just the more I go over things, you know, it's kind of like when you set out to learn something new. I mean, most people can probably relate it back to when they were younger, right? They had a favorite band. When they first discovered the band, they didn't know anything about them. But, you know, you kind of, you know, when you're young, you're a teeny bopper, you kind of obsess over a band, right? And before you know it, in a couple of months' time, you know everything about all the band members and that sort of thing. It's very much the same. You know what I mean? You just kind of got to almost obsess over things, and you just start to learn more and more, and it just becomes almost like second nature after a while. Like the more you go over the basics, like I've done, I don't know, probably 3-4 Python courses, probably a few more than that actually, all just going over the fundamentals of the language. Not even applying it to a trading sense, just learning the basics of the language. But it's been good to do it from different people because everyone has their own unique way of explaining things.
You know, one thing, if I might jump in, it's, you're kind of hitting on the Yoda principle. This is what I call the idea that, like, Yoda didn't start as Yoda. Like, he wasn't a wise old sage when he was born, right? I mean, he started somewhere. He had a teacher. He grew in to be this incredible, you know, teacher of other Jedi, but no one, you know, is born with knowledge. Like you say, you know, you start out somewhere and you go at whatever pace you can and you acquire skills, and eventually one day you can become, you know, a 9,000-year-old or 900-year-old little green Muppet teaching
Absolutely.
Luke Skywalker.
Right? Yeah.
We all have dreams.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, is like no one's born with the knowledge on how to do anything, you know what I mean? It's just a skill that if you want to learn, you just set your mind to it and you just go out there and learn it. So you just accept that it's going to take time and just be prepared to put in the work.
I was going to say, just remember, all traders started out thinking CNBC is where they're going to get, like, you know, finger on the pulse, market knowledge, like with CNBC. You know, everybody believes early on, and then they get a little jaded, they get a little experienced, then they grow up a little bit, then they start searching, they go through the struggle, and those that make it through the wandering struggle are the ones who become professional traders. They, you know, persevere.
100%. And Zach, just something I want to ask you, which I probably should have asked a little bit earlier, but you asked me about how I'm keeping track of my progress and am I journaling and that sort of thing. And there was actually a few questions that came in about that subject. So I'd like to put it to you and ask you, what tips or pointers would you give to other traders who need some guidance about journaling? Like, what exactly should be in a journal besides what price you bought and sold at?
I think, okay, this is a good question. Every trader journals a different way. I journal like a scrapbook. Like, I put some screen caps, some text notes, maybe an audio recording of like how I feel at the end of the day. I just throw it all in a folder with that date. That's just me though, right? Some people want a Word document. Other people make a database or a spreadsheet. It depends on how quantitative or qualitative you are. For me, it's a lot of the visceral that I want to capture. I want to figure out how I felt that day, why I felt that day. Was it internal or external to the sort of trading ecosystem? Meaning, was I upset about something that happened in trading, or did I not get enough sleep the night before? Did I fight with my girlfriend? I kind of want to observe the behavioral triggers that might be happening around me too. There are so many other things other than just like what price you buy and sell. What was the market doing when you took the trade? You know, was it trending or was it a non-trending environment? Was it a big reversal day, that sort of thing? What type of trading day did it appear to be when you took the trade? Something I'm big on, you know, numerically scoring your trades just on your own, you know, your own personal scoring of 1 to 5. How confident were you in that trade? It's not bad if you take a 1 or 2 confidence trade, meaning low confidence. Presumably, you know, your risk is appropriately smaller to reflect that it's like, hey, I don't think this is going to work. But if it does, then great. I'm in a wonderful trade for 8 cents of risk or some, you know, modest amount. What was your risk reward on the trade? How good was your entry? What time of day did you enter? Things like that. I think the more you trade, it's sort of like going out on dates. The more dates you go out on, the more you notice kind of commonalities. Like if the girl you're going out for a coffee date with doesn't show up for the first, like, you know, 20 or 30 minutes, she's like super late, maybe that's not a good match. And for the record, for me, that would be a great match. I'm always running on Hurwitz time. Anybody who's taken me up on that free consult knows that I'm usually running 5 to 10 minutes behind. What a great, if it's 5 or 10 minutes, that's awesome. That's a success, you know? Anyway. With journaling, I think you have to figure out what appeals to you, because journaling sucks. And we all know it. We all know it. Nobody enjoys writing, especially about their losses, right? Part of what I talk about, like the circle of good trading, the last point in the circle is to review with clarity. It's your job to keep your head held high, look straight in the eyes of your trading report, and see it for what it is. Because if you're one of those people who, like, and I've had days like that, I know we have all had days like this, it hits like 4:01 p.m. Eastern, and I'm like force quitting Thinkorswim. I'm like, get out of my fucking face. Like, I can't be looking at you right now because the trading report is so bad for the day. Nobody wants to get there. We all want to be able to look at it, and even if we have a losing day, kind of be motivated. Well, you know what I'll do? I'll take some screenshots of the day, and I'll be able to look back at what I saw when I have a clearer head. I can't tell you how transformative that is for traders. It's like holding a mirror up to themselves. They can finally see the struggles that they're experiencing. I used to do that when I was a younger kid in my teenage years. Here's a little bit of my teeny bopper, teen angst therapy. And by the way, we're going to come back to that. I want to know what band you were talking about. But I used to open a TextPad file on my computer, close my eyes, and just type, just sort of like stream of consciousness. After I was done, you know, a couple minutes of writing, I would go back and I'd read it through and just observe my own feelings, like what I'm experiencing, but not saying, my own kind of internal monologue. And that was what helped me in journaling my own kind of thoughts and feelings and applying the same thing, like I was saying, a stream of consciousness rant. So maybe one day after, you know, 250 episodes, we'll do a, you know, for special subscribers, you know, we'll release the unedited audio notes of Zach Hurwitz cursing at himself after a bad trading day. No, I'm just kidding. All right, now back to the important question, Aaron, because you almost glossed over this. You said you were a teeny bopper and you followed a band obsessively. What band are you talking about? Because I know you're talking about a band. What is it?
I'd probably rather not say.
No, you have to tell us. You can't mention it and then not tell us. I'll tell you, I have a terrible one that I liked too. So go ahead, you give me one, and then I'll give you one.
I'm probably going to say Good Charlotte. That was one of them.
Oh my God.
I know there's a few others.
Oh my God, Aaron.
I'm trying to think.
No, dude.
Okay, I'm trying to think of a better example.
that's a great example. Thank you. That has made my night. The band I liked, prepare yourself, it was Creed.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty shocking.
Did you just hear like 10,000 listeners simultaneously? Here, we're keeping with the Star Wars theme, right? It's like, I sense a disturbance in the force. Like 1,000 voices cried out at once. You know, it's like, seriously, people are just like, good Charlotte and Creed. Who am I listening to on this podcast?
Yeah, that's a bad combo. So just going back to the journaling, let's quickly move off that.
Ben, yeah. Come on, I couldn't skip over the band. All right, go ahead.
So on the journaling, like, it's probably one thing to journal your trades and keep records of, you know, what you've been doing, your activity. How often should someone maybe make a conscious effort to go back and review their journaling?
Do a small review every weekend, Saturday or Sunday. You don't want to do it end of Friday. Come on, nobody's got a clear mind at the end of Friday. We're all burned out, right? Small review. So we're talking maybe 20 to 30 minutes, and then maybe a larger review of an hour or two to review the weekly kind of notes. And remember, this doesn't have to be a regimented, detailed, multi-page report. Journal the way that you're going to journal. You know what I'm saying? Like, do what fits with your personal style. So make it enjoyable for you. Like I was mentioning, the scrapbooking. It's something I can do kind of on the fly as I think about it, as something strikes me about the day or something that I've written in chat. I can just grab that and copy and paste it. That's easier to me than writing a paragraph about each trade at the end of the day. It is going to take up a lot of time. Obviously, if you do this like every day, if you review the notes, that's going to something you have to add into your workflow. I don't know if daily review is really that important. I'm not trying to sound lazy here, but it really is. It's more about, I think, the weekly. One data point does not a trend make. So you're going to have terrible days. They are going to happen where everything is wrong. And, you know, nothing's going right. The best setups don't work. You fat finger a trade and maybe buy too much of it, and then it goes against you. And you got to make it through it. It's the prepare yourselves, guys, cheesy traderism incoming. You know, if you want to be here for the good days, you got to be here for all of the days. You just have to show up and trade. You don't get to just show up on the good trading days. You have to make it through all of the difficult ones as well. But I don't think it's as beneficial to like necessarily spend a ton of time reviewing each day's notes until the end of the week. That's all.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that kind of just goes back to that trading mantra everyone's heard 1,000 times, is just do what, you know, fits you. Like, you know, find a trading approach that fits you. Find a journaling approach that fits in with your schedule. And, just stick to it.
You know why people react so negatively to that, though? It's because it sounds like we're talking about our, like, spirit animal, like our Patronus from Harry Potter. You know what I mean? Like, who is your, like, your style of trading that calls to you, Aaron Fifield? And it's not that easy. It's not like you find, oh, I belong in House Gryffindor. Like, I belong as an RSI trader. It's never going to be that simple. I think what we're saying is, like, figure out what elements of trading really appeal to you. For example, I'm a very visual learner. I like pattern-based trading. That's just fun to me. It's more fun than, reading the tape, right? That doesn't mean that that's a bad strategy or that you shouldn't consider it or that it might appeal directly to you, but to each their own. And you have to find something that is intellectually fulfilling and in the same way, hopefully, obviously, very profitable too.
Mm. Yeah. Now, that's really well said, actually.
The trading Patronus part, right? The Harry Potter reference, obviously.
Of course.
Just messing around. All right, so do you mind if I keep going? I know you've got some questions for me interspersed, too.
Yeah, no, keep going. I know we've got a bunch of here to get through.
I know, so. I gotta grill you, man. I'm sorry, this is a tough one. Are you ever worried that your work for Chat with Traders is, like, somehow spreading you too thin, maybe even hindering your ability to become the trader you want to be?
Yeah, and I'm glad someone actually asked this question because it's been something I've been thinking about a little bit lately. Sometimes I think, yeah, maybe it possibly is because, you know, it does take quite a lot of time to obviously run the podcast. Like, first of all, you've got to actually find people who qualify for an interview. Then you've actually got to get them to agree, and then you've got to lock in a time. Like, there's a lot involved before you even get to recording the interview. And then obviously it needs editing, it needs, you know, show notes, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of work involved, and it does take up quite a lot of time. But I am learning so much from it. And I think whether I trade directly like the traders I interview or not, there's always a few good takeaways in there. for me, which I can apply to my own trading. And, you know, they might just be something that just sticks in the back of my mind. But, I mean, the time factor is something I'm aware of. And I think that's good that I am mindful of that. And one of the ways I actually plan on tackling that going into 2016 is I have a virtual assistant who I'm actually interviewing for a virtual assistant at the moment to help out with things.
That's great.
And I'm also probably bringing someone on to help out with research for the traders I interview. So that's definitely going to cut back my time quite a lot, which will allow me to spend more time on my trading. But I mean, in saying that, I am still spending, you know, 2 to 3 hours most nights on my trading, you know, mostly learning coding and programming, quantitative methods and that sort of thing. But I mean, one of the things which I really liked from one of the interviews I've done since episode 25 was Tom Dante. I think it was episode 36. I think he was awesome. And one of the quotes he said was, if you're not working on your edge, someone else is. And I really loved it how he just went into depth, like really went into talking about how trading is such a competitive business. And it kind of gave me a bit of a wake up. I mean, even though I am spending a few hours each day, I always feel like I can be doing more and I should be doing more, because the ultimate goal for me is to become a better trader. And, you know, there's guys who are doing this 8 hours a day plus, you know, focusing on their trading. If I'm only doing a couple of hours at night, you know, is that enough? So short answer is, yeah, it has crossed my mind, but I also think the podcast is hugely beneficial to myself. And also going off what many listeners have told me, also think it's beneficial to many other people, which I really like. So, I mean, I don't think I'm doing it just for selfish reasons. Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I'm going to be bringing a couple of people on next year to help out, just take the workload off my hands. Not entirely, but, you know, more hands make light work, as they say.
When you first answered, when I said, you know, you're worried that it's hindering the ability to become a trader, and you said yes, I got chills. I was like, wait, so is this the end of the podcast? Is it, it's like, all right, guys, that's it. Thanks so much for listening to Chat with Traders. Last episode, we're gone. We're out. We got to go get working on our edge because, you know, if not, someone else will be. I think it's such a great quote from Dante. Like, oh, my goodness. That freaked me out the first time I heard it because it really is true. It's like, while you're watching a football game, someone else is learning how to code in Python.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the truth. So, like, you know, stop messing about. Like, you've got better things to be doing.
Yeah, I almost want to get that printed out and stick it on my wall.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant quote. And yeah, that's definitely one of those points that's stuck in the back of my mind. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have heard that if it wasn't for the podcast, you know. So there's so many benefits to doing it.
And especially some of these perfect little quotable moments, writing them down in your own handwriting or printing them out, I mean, putting them on your wall next year. I know this is kind of a common traderism. This is a thing that we all do. I remember when I was in college, I would write, you know, never forget to sell this if it breaks below so-and-so, and put it on my monitor, start screaming about something. My buddy would come in the room and he'd look at the post-it notes and he'd pick one of them off and he'd hand it to me and he'd go, well, you know, it's your handwriting. Like, you wrote this and now you're complaining about it. And like, you should maybe listen to this guy who wrote this post-it note that is in your handwriting. You know what I'm saying, dude? Kind of pointing out to me like, hey, listen, no one else is in control of this. Like, you're the one who not only fails, but sees the success. All you have to do is take it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's something I'll just add in there is one of the things I've kind of been aware of, but it's just kind of really become more obvious, is that in trading, no one's there to tell you what to do. Like, it's completely you and the markets. Like, it's not like, okay, so if you're running a business, you've got clients, like you have deadlines, you need to get things to people before certain times. When you're trading, it's just you and the market, and no one's there to tell you to put in the time to you know, to tell you what you should and shouldn't be doing. Like, it's, you need to really take responsibility.
You're only accountable to, like, the math and the markets. You're not accountable to anyone else. There's no driver of what to do next.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's become sort of really obvious to me this year. And I think, I think one of the good things to be is just really mindful about and honest with yourself. Like, are you putting in the time? Are you doing what you can be to, you know, reach your goals and reach the level of trading that you want to be at? Like, if you're not, then you need to, you know, take a step back and think about, well, how can I change things? What should I be doing?
That's another interesting point. Like, it's okay to be not serious about trading. It's okay if you're not trying to learn how to trade right now, or you don't have the time, you don't have the capital, you don't have the patience, not the right life arrangement scenario, you know what I mean? It's okay if you're not serious about trading. It's okay if you're serious about trading. You know what's not okay? Is telling people you're serious about trading and not being serious about it. Now, I mean, we're kind of preaching to the choir, right? If you're listening to this podcast, odds are you're doing the hard work. You're seeking out, further education on these subjects. Like, you're probably doing the right thing. But there are plenty of people out there who claim to be putting in the effort and the time, and they're really not. They're just kind of fluffing themselves up.
Yeah.
And, like we said, you want to be able to look at your report with your head held high. You want to be able to say, I gave it my all. I did absolutely everything that I possibly could. This is a point I was going to make later, but it kind of comes up right now. It's like there are two universes from this day, from this point forward. One in which you do whatever it takes to become a successful trader, whether that's weeks or months or years from now. And then the other universe where you know, trading's so tough. It's a young man's game, Glengarry Glen Ross reference. But, you know, people kind of complain and commiserate and I'll get around to it. You know, maybe I'll learn risk management. But what about this indicator? And they get easily distracted and pulled to the next thing. They never really take stock of where they are or where they want to be. The two universes. It's the same universe, but in one you succeed and in the other you're always remembering what it would have felt like if maybe you had tried to succeed just once. Mm. You can choose which universe you live in. It doesn't matter if you're 16 or 60. You know, you get to choose which world you go forth in. It's easy to, you know what I'm saying? It's easy to get psyched up and say it. It's a little harder to actually put it in practice. I feel like that's what trading is all about, though. It's like the repetitive. It's the consistency. It's not about getting psyched up one day, having a good Monday trading, and then screwing up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's about every single day for the next 20, 30, 50, whatever years of your trading career. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have to plan for that longevity.
For sure, for sure.
So tell me, I mean, this is the question that I know everybody asks me if I know, like I've got some secret information about which are your favorite episodes, but are there any interviews that have resonated with you particularly? Are there highlights, kind of memorable takeaways, episodes 25 to 49?
Yeah, I mean, that's another question that came up quite a lot. And, you know, I totally understand why people are asking that. It's a good question. And, I mean, this is obviously fresh in my mind, but the interview with Haim Bodek last week was, I was pretty stoked with that interview. Pretty stoked just to get him on the show. Just his whole story is so fascinating, and just like his level of understanding on the market microstructure is just probably unfathomable for most of us.
It's like having Julian Assange on your program, you know, or Edward Snowden. It's like literally at that level, guys. I hope you realize how big Haim Bodek is. He's awesome.
Yeah, like just the magnitude of what he did, you know what I mean? Just the whole story was really cool to be able to speak with him and get it on the podcast. And I also liked how he spoke about payment for order flow, because, I mean, that's just something I was unaware of. Like, I'll put my hands up and say I knew nothing about that. And I think probably many people listening were unaware of that as well. So that was a really interesting topic. Just another one of the benefits of doing the podcast. Yeah, and then obviously I've mentioned Tom Dante reinforcing how competitive trading is. And one of the things he also mentioned, which I found really interesting, was learning from your mistakes quickly. Not just learning from your mistakes, but learning from them quickly. That's another one of the things that's just stuck in the back of my mind. I think you're going to be able to say this in a much more poetic way than I can, Zach. But if you are continually doing average things, right, you're just continually getting average results, and maybe if it's not even in trading, maybe like, you know, just in life, you begin to accept that, whether on a subconscious level. I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about this type of thing. It's just kind of what I'm almost seeing here. Is if you become used to poor results, it's harder for you to actually progress and move forward like you want to. I don't know. Did that make sense?
Well, it's not only, you know what I think it is? It's the accepting of the results. If you look at poor results and go, that's not me, I'm better than that, I can do, like, you're fighting the kind of malaise, the complacency. I picture it as like molasses or like, you know, sluggishness. That's what I'm visualizing here. This idea of like, well, but this is all I am. I'm just a suffering trader. This is that victimization loop of like, but the market makers, they know where my stops are. They're always going to know. It's like, well, come on, man. You know, you gotta be not okay failing. You gotta fight back. Get up off the mat and at least throw a punch, even if you're going to get knocked down again. Being unwilling to accept them is the important part. And I like that, becoming used to poor results. You know, you're just...
Yeah, like you just kind of accept them and it's not okay. You've got to be, again, it just comes back to that thing. It comes back to that thing, being very mindful of where you're at and...
being, you know, self-aware.
Yeah,
self-aware. Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Also, Jack Schwager was phenomenal to have him on the podcast. Obviously learned a lot from him. Very well spoken, incredibly insightful for obvious reasons.
I was going to say, if he wasn't, he would be a super big letdown, wouldn't he be? It's like Jack Schwager saying nothing. No, he was great. It was a fantastic interview.
And that was – he actually told me afterwards that's the longest interview he's ever done, which was pretty cool. I'll take that. Peter Brandt, he was another really great interview. One of the things I really took away from speaking with Peter is, I don't want to say, I don't know if simplicity is the right word, but I just love how the type of setups he trades. They're very, I don't know if simple is the right word, but I mean, they're just horizontal support and resistance, trading a longer time frame. And obviously it's just worked out very well for him. I learned a lot from his insight, also about risk management, you know, that it's okay to take small positions. You don't have to swing for the fences every trade. And that's why he's continued to stay in the game for, I don't know, 45 years, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's quite a trading record. You know what word kind of comes to mind when I think about Peter Brandt? It's almost like elemental.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're dealing with like elements of nature. We're dealing with like the building blocks of the world around us when we talk about his trading style. And I think that's why it's so successful. It's not a bunch of bells and whistles and this, you know, particular little indicator and this tweak and this particular setup. He's trading from one place on the chart to the next. I think he's reduced it, or distilled it, I should say, rather than reduced. Here I am, a novice trader in my, you know, when compared to Peter Brandt, talking about how he's like reduced his trade. He's distilled his trading down to the essential elements. I mean, I think you were going to say something in this effect, that kind of, you know, all the great traders you've interviewed and what you hope to bring to your own game is that clarity of vision for oneself and one's trading. Like, mm-hmm. You must know who you are, know what you're good at, and know what you suck at. Like, if you want to feel good, focus on what you're good at and good at alone, right? And that's all. If you want to get better, you got to know every aspect of yourself. You have to know every angle, your best side and your worst side.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, another great takeaway that just comes to mind from the interviews since we last, since episode 25, Dan Shapiro, he was really cool, a lot of high energy, obviously. And just really dug into the emotional side of things, which I think was good for a lot of listeners. I mean, that's something I hear come up quite often. Obviously, I speak with many listeners through emails, Twitter, etc. Psychology side seems to be, you know, quite challenging for many. That's definitely one to check out if you haven't. And another thing he said, which I quite liked, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, like, he kind of took a step back and looked at a chart and thought, where can I consistently make $100 from this chart? And I really liked that point. I mean, I don't know if that's going to resonate with everyone, but just looking at a chart and seeing if there's something that comes up, something that repeats that you can act on and you can take out just a small chunk. And that's something also Linda Rashke spoke about, is just taking a trade and just taking out a small chunk of a move and just taking it onto the next one, do it again.
Well, it's training you to think about repeatable events rather than a one-off. Like, everybody likes to talk about KBIO, the massive short squeeze, kind of takeover, reverse merger, blah, 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 from the last couple of weeks. Everybody likes thinking about those giant percentage moves, but they happen extremely rarely. Like, why would you look at a chart and observe that one event and focus in on that? That's like, instead of observing that the sun is out, you pay attention to the one day there's an eclipse. You talk about how dark the sun is. It's like, no. You're focused on the wrong part of all of this. Like, look at the other 364 days out of this year. You know what I mean? Where there's no eclipse.
Yeah.
You have to see the chart for what it is. You have to, see opportunity in a consistent sense instead of just this one particular crazy event that, traders kind of habitually focus on. And why not? They're exciting. They're kind of a marquee event, right? There's something that everybody's paying attention to. I think this is why momentum trading is so, like, highly sought after. I mean, it's exciting. It's sexy, right? You're trading where there's big movement. I understand it. That doesn't mean it's reliable or it's the best, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
So I cheated. I was saying, I guess, one of the points that I think you're going to be answering this next question with, but what are some of the commonalities between many of the, traders, and particularly the great traders that you've interviewed?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, obviously they are very clear on who they are. They know what they do, and they know what they do trade, and they know what they don't trade. So I think that's important, is being able to answer that for yourself and accept what you are going to trade and what you're not going to trade. That's something I've definitely taken on board. We're speaking kind of like similarities here. So another thing I think is a similarity between many of the traders I've interviewed is they haven't succeeded by chance. So it's not like they got to their level of success and made the profits they did by a fluke. It was it really came down to their incredible work ethic. I think that's definitely one of the big commonalities between everyone I've interviewed, and a lot of them took years to get there. I haven't done a tally, but many traders who I've interviewed have said that they took, 4 or 5 years before they started to see some consistency. And many of the traders I've interviewed have obviously been trading a lot longer than that. So just understanding and accepting that it's going to take time.
You have to just stay alive for the first few years.
Yeah.
That's really all it is. It's not about thriving. It's just not dying as a trader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's definitely a big one. They haven't got to where they are now as a fluke. It comes down to their work ethic. That's what I strongly believe.
So how are you applying kind of like what you're learning to your own trading and your methodology?
Yeah, this is another question that came up quite often. So it's a tricky one to answer, actually, because it's not like I'm applying everything I'm learning in like a systematic process of absorbing their knowledge. But like I mentioned, certain things just subconsciously stick in your mind and they stay around. I think just overall, it's just given me a deeper understanding of the landscape of trading. And it's going to pay off in the long run. Like, there's just no way possible it's made me, I'm worse off for doing this. Some things that I've heard have given me extra conviction that I am doing the right thing, which has been nice. But it's also, there has been a couple moments where I could have easily been distracted by, the shiny ball syndrome. But that's something I've always been very conscious of. So even if I don't trade, I think I've mentioned this already, directly like some of the guys I've interviewed. Obviously, that'd be very tricky. There's always things you can take away and learn and just keep in mind.
You know what it is, man? It's that everybody thinks that there's like a secret conversation that happens between you and the guest, like shortly after you wrap up the interview, where you're like, hey, so Peter Brandt, like just tell me, man, like what do I set my RSI to? Can you just tell me like what length of moving average? And Peter's like, oh yes, you just have to use this and this. And he gives you the like inside scoop. So people want to know, like, you know, where do you get your hot tips from?
Yeah.
I'm totally kidding.
And I mean, I think it's important that I say this, and I don't want to be a dick about it, but like everyone who's listening has the same insight that I do. So we're both hearing like the same things. You know what I mean? I just want to express that to make sure that people aren't just listening. They're actually listening and really sort of absorbing the content, taking on the wisdom that, you know, many of these traders are sharing. Because it's easy to do that. I mean, it's easy just to listen and not act on it. Like, what's that saying? Knowledge is useless without action. I don't know, mm-hmm. Paraphrasing. mm-hmm. Something along those lines.
So tell me, what were your beliefs and expectations about trading, like before you got started in trading compared to now? I always think that's funny to ask people, like, when you were not a trader, what did you think about trading that the minute you got in here, you're like, oh my God, I was totally wrong about all of this. Is there anything that's dramatically changed compared to when you started?
Yeah, I think when I first started, I definitely did think it was going to be a lot easier than it is. 100% I thought that. I thought, you know, if I just read these few textbooks, you know, I should be good in 6 months and I'll, you know, be making substantial money, right? That's what I thought. And I remember thinking that traders just must laugh at the rest of the world because they just earn so much money. And I mean, I still think that probably is the case for many, but it takes a long time to get to that point. So it's definitely a lot harder than I thought. And I also realized that there are many ways to succeed. I mean, I know we've all heard this before, but that's one of the things that I understand is, I mean, obviously I was introduced to trading with a specific style and a specific methodology. But, you know, I've since learned that there's just many, many ways to succeed and to make money in markets. And it's also your background is irrelevant, I feel, meaning like your level of education. I don't mm-hmm. think that's – because, I mean, many people use that as an excuse. They're like, oh, I don't know this. I don't know that.
Yeah, well, I never took a class in finance, so who am I qualified to? I know what you mean.
Yep. Yeah. So I think people's background – is irrelevant. It's what do they say? It's about where you're going, not where you've come from. So,
well, it's saying that trading is a meritocratic thing. Mm. It doesn't matter who you are, what car you drive, how tall you are, how good looking you are, who your dad was. Nobody gives a shit. It matters about your next trades. It's not even about the trades you have taken. There's the saying of you're only as good as your next trade. Not even the trade you're currently in, but the next trade. Because a man who can't find another trade and who can't manage that future position, that's a person who's done trading.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's an ongoing process. And if you make it anything less, if you make it a one-off process, so to all you guys out there who have all of your account in some shitty little pharmaceutical four, you know, letter ticker stock, you know what I mean? This one's for you guys. You got to plan on trading tomorrow too. You can't just risk it all to try and double up. That's not a strategy for success. It will work until it doesn't. And when it doesn't, of course, then you're done trading.
Yeah, it's got to be sustainable. I think that's a really key word, actually. That's something I've picked up from, I think that was Mike Balfour. I've probably mentioned this on episode 25, but that's a really key word, I think, to trading success is have an approach that's sustainable. But I mean, another thing that's changed or I've come to believe about trading is that things can be as complex or as simple as you want to make them. And a lot of people say keep it simple, and that's probably a fair thing to say. But I mean, I've come to realize that some people actually thrive off complexity, and I don't think that's a that's a bad thing. I think that's okay. But I mean, it just goes to show that it's, you know, you can make this fit you. So it can be as complex as you want to make it, or it can be as simple as you want to make it. That's another thing I've come to realize.
I think it's the difference between inductive and deductive learners. Inductive learners tend to get 80% of the material, you know, in, you know, 20% of the time. And then there's the deductive people who will get 100% of the material, but maybe in 100% of the time. They're going to take longer, but they'll get full completion, right? That's just two different learning styles. That's not to say one is better. One might be faster, one might be more holistic. I mean, just depends. And there's not to say that one really is superior in the market. I've seen successful traders of both types.
Yeah. So let me throw this back to you, Zach. What beliefs did you have, and what expectations did you have about trading before getting started?
Oh my God. I'm thinking back to, all right, this is really embarrassing, guys. I used to chart like channels on Google Finance charts. I remember I'd be in class and I'd pull up a ticker on like Google Finance. This is back in like 2007, 2008. And this is before I had Thinkorswim even. And I thought it was going to be so easy as to define two trend lines and just buy every time it hits that lower trend line and sell at the peak. Like, I was measuring out how much money I was going to be making if I was trading 2 or 3 or 500 shares. Like, I was counting my money. Like, I had planned to make this with absolutely, you know, no deviation, no wrinkle in the fabric. And, you start trading live and you say, well, what do you mean I didn't get filled? Wait, what do you mean commissions are? Oh, what do you mean I just clicked that button too many times and now I have to pay extra commission? It's just, you start appreciating more of the friction, the loss to entropy, you know, just the kind of the energy loss and therefore profitability loss in trading that you don't account for. You think it's going to be so easy, as you say. I mean, I remember thinking that the markets were going to be stable. You have to remember, I learned about the markets in 2007 when things were going perfectly fine. There was just the first inklings of some, you know, systemic crisis. What does that mean? Systemic? You mean it hurts the whole system? How could the banks be interwoven? I mean, nobody knew what subprime was, credit default swaps, et cetera, all these derivatives. I think the markets kind of were a fierce reality check for everyone around that time, that they are violent, that they are uncaring. They're like nature. You know, they'll burn you or freeze you or blow you off a cliff, and they don't care because you're just another animal on this planet. You know, this goes back to that idea of like elemental. When you're dealing with the elements, you know, they can be friendly, they can be quite indifferent, quite scary. And we have to have respect for them. I guess I kind of had that arrogance of, you know, we as humans will control the elements around us. You know, man versus nature. What if it's man versus financial markets nature? You know, oftentimes in trading, it's not you versus them, it's you versus you. That's a concept I know a lot of people have said before, but like that's what makes for such an evenly matched battle. And that's why trading is so hard. You are always fighting your next limitation. You are always struggling to take the leap to the next lily pad, the next stepping stone, without being able to see it sometimes. There's a great quote, sometimes you just have to take the leap and build your wings on the way down. And of course, that's a very ominous quote if you're not building your wings. I mean, that goes back to the two universes. If you're working in that first universe where you're working hard to be a great trader, you're pretty confident, I'm going to sprout wings any minute now. If you're not, I mean, you don't have much faith. You're just sort of biding your time until you hit the ground. And that kind of grim reality, of course, no trader wants to hear. This goes back to like why trading education is such a marketing-driven kind of industry. People want to be enticed. They want to be encouraged. They want to be uplifted. They don't want the reality check. They don't want the kind of the grim information about risk management. They want the sexy. They want the exciting. And there's definitely something to be said for being engaging, being entertaining, and relatable. But there's also something to be said for like teaching people survival skills. You know what I mean? It's like being a survival instructor and trying to just show people I don't know, pictures of hot girls in outdoor clothes. I don't know, you know, hunting clothes or whatever. It's not going to do them very much good when they're freezing to death and they forgot how to build a shelter, you know.
I think this this might be a good time to say a quote. Which how's that go?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that we've been taught up until this point has been to make us feel better than it could ever make us trade. We're given all these tools that make us feel important and on the pulse of the market. You know, it's almost like we're in our own Fidelity commercial of like, aren't you a modern trader on top of, you know, the fast moving financial markets? Well, you and your analytics is this cheesy kind of like, you know, get psyched, Mr. Trader, because you're going to be powerful one day. Truth is, it's like the little speak and say stroller you give to a toddler to make them feel like they're interacting with the world around them. And really, it's just keeping them busy. It's the same thing with our indicators, our, you know, crappy little beginner technical analysis. It's unfair. Because I think there are people who are really putting in hard work, trying to learn the more, like you're saying, some people thrive on complexity or they seek it out. Those who are looking for the more sophisticated pieces of technical analysis, like, they deserve access to it. Quick little plug. That's why I'm so adamant about teaching the institutional trading strategy of volume-weighted average price at thevof.com. I'm just kidding. No, it's so important that traders realize what we're given is to occupy us, to kind of, I don't want to say waylay us, but, you know, to kind of hold us back, to just to occupy us, I think is the best way to, you know, fill our time, to pass the time, to bide our time. That's really what it is. And it's insulting when you realize that, because we deserve better. We're the same people as, I don't want to say Peter Brandt, because he is such a legend. It's not like all of us are Peter Brandt, but we're all human beings. So is Peter Brandt. What's to say, you know, when he started out, he didn't doubt himself. I bet you if you asked every trader, did you ever doubt yourself? Anybody who tells you that they always believed, I mean, they're just straight up lying, you know. I think we talked about this in my first interview, the kind of poisonous self-talk that traders go through when you're really down on yourself. Like, why do you think it cuts right to your core when you know what to say to push your own buttons? It's because you are you. You know your weakness. You know what you're the most ashamed of in your trading. You know what you are so bad at that you don't even want to tell your other trading friends about. You know what you do. You don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell Aaron. You don't have to tell us. That's fine. But admit it to yourself. Start being honest with yourself so that you have more, I want to say, like, self-credibility, like self-esteem, self-value, worth. So you start trusting your intuition. So you say, you know, I'm pretty self-aware of this. Like, I know if I'm going to screw this up. I'm not screwing this up. This is a good trading approach. And it's okay if I go through a drawdown. Because this isn't me. This is the approach that I'm taking. It allows you kind of shield or deflect a bit of the burden, the ego blame that we all put upon ourselves. And if we're not careful, like you were saying, you're not accountable to anyone. Well, you're also not protected or bolstered, kind of emboldened by anyone else. You know, in a normal, like, business, in a partnership, you have partners who are going to say, oh, you're having a bad day? Well, tough shit. We got work to do, buddy. Let's go. And psych you back up. Many traders, like, really don't have that. That's something that a lot of traders who reached out to me from the offering from episode 11 have said, I don't know any other traders. Where am I going to meet them? Right? On a forum online at, like, a meetup group? Like, that's ridiculous. Would traders succeed without a kind of social element? I don't really know. Like, if you ever – weird thought experiment, right? If you locked a trader in a room, you gave him enough food and water and air, of course, but, like, they had enough time and money, I guess. You got to give them enough of everything, right? But would they be able to really succeed in trading? If they had all the trading books, maybe all of Chat with Traders podcasts, if they had everything except for – actually connecting with other traders and being held accountable to other traders and seeing how other traders do it. I think it is so instructive to see other traders struggling with the same things. It is cathartic to go through that, oh my God, thank God I'm not the only guy who gets stopped out at the lows. Or, you know, buys a stock today and it goes nowhere and you forget about it tomorrow. Of course, that's the trend day. People need to see that you are doing something that is perfectly fine. It is right. It is part of the path. And it goes back to that whole, like, trusting of the process, that we young guys get to be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Trust the process. We're too young to appreciate any process. we just see the like the hard work and the struggle, and we're waiting for that process to pay off. You know, I'm checking my hypothetical watch, my Rolex, right? I'm kidding, I don't have a Rolex, but looking at my watch going like, when is this process going to pay off? When I'm 30 or 35 or 40? It's hard to trust in the process when you're early in the process. You need to connect with other traders who are going through the same thing, maybe a little further along the path. Or instead of looking up the ladder, maybe you should look a little further down the ladder. I mean, this is something we're going to be talking about, working with other developing traders who aren't at the same level as you. I mean, this goes back to kind of how I got really passionate about trading. I moved from it just being a fun thing to do while I was looking for a job fresh out of college and into something that I could do for the rest of my life. What do they say? You know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, that's a brilliant quote. And I really actually like that experiment you kind of suggested there. I think that'd mm-hmm. be really interesting to find out how people would perform in that type of environment.
Who do you want to lock into a room for like 6 months? Do you have any traders who you want? We could pick a really annoying trader and just lock him away for 6 months and not have to talk to him.
Maybe.
If you volunteer me for this experiment, I'm going to be pissed, Aaron. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm thinking some of the Twitter trolls.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just lock them in a room with each other and
and they can prove themselves there.
No, that's too funny.
So let's change this up a little bit, because we got a lot of questions coming in that listeners want the answer to from you. So I've got a big long list here. I mean, we've already over an hour into it. I think this is going to be a long episode. So,
I think so too. But did you want to? I actually, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you mind if I get one more question in before we move on to my topic?
Yeah, sure.
You speak with so many of your listeners too, and I got to applaud you for that, because, like, look, I thought I talked to a lot of traders. Guys, trust me. You think I have it bad? Aaron. I love that you guys reach out to him. I know Aaron does too. He doesn't want you to stop or anything, but it's great that you get to connect with so many of the people who say, I'm sure, overwhelmingly positive things about the podcast. Are there any like common struggles? This is maybe that cathartic moment of like, show people what everybody experiences, you know?
Yeah. So that's a good question. Some of the things that tend to come up quite often in the emails I receive, which is awesome. I love hearing from all the listeners and that, so keep it up. One of the things that keeps coming up is many people think they're so close to profitability. They think like they're almost there. I don't know that I have the solution for that, but that's definitely a common theme. People think they're very close. They've almost made it. They've almost got consistency, but they don't. Not yet, they don't. Maybe you can expand on that. Like, why do people always think they're so close? Like, are they so close, or is there something missing there?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think people are right. I'm sorry to give you guys the bad news. I don't think you're as close as you think. That doesn't mean you can't get there. That doesn't mean it's unattainable, but it's a lot further than you think. I mean, look at Aaron. We were just talking about this, man. 6 months ago, or whenever, right? We expected we were going to have a working algo by now, but there's a million things that come up. Life gets in the way of your best laid plans, and that's totally fine. I would say if you asked a room of 100 traders if they're good or close to profitability, 99 would tell you yes, and the one who didn't say anything is the profitable trader out of the bunch. You know what I'm saying? The people who are the most vocal are often not the best traders. Sometimes, you know, the quiet you know, diminutive, tiny voice, just, oh yeah, I'm over here just watching the markets, no big deal. But I understand the wanting to feel, hey, I am this close. I am right there, man. And if it just, you know, if just risk management, if I could just nail down risk management, and it's like, guys, people write books about risk management. People write multiple textbooks about risk management. People's jobs, in some cases, are to be risk managers for a firm. You know what I mean? This is not something you can just master quickly and then you'll become profitable. It's like an engine. It's a million different intricate parts all working together in the right order and the right rhythm. And that's what's really important about when we keep saying, like, find something that fits to your personality. We're saying find something that is moving to the beat of, you know, the song that you are playing, so to speak, right? I mean, you want to play something in rhythm with what you're playing. You don't want it to be a total mismatch that requires you to, let's say, wake up at a totally different, you know, hour of the day, or trade a different style, or trade a different product. Maybe you're not a, you know, you don't like trading Forex, but you have to trade Forex, for example. I don't want to discourage people. I don't want you to think you're like, you're never going to get there. It's just be realistic with yourself about how long this is going to take. Part of this is, and I think here's what you're getting at, managing expectations. If you don't manage your expectations well, you are going to get really upset at yourself. The poisonous self-talk is going to come back. I'm sure, Aaron, you even felt that. Like, you get discouraged sometimes when you say, oh, you know, I should be a lot further along. God, if only I had more time, if I'd spent more time on the code. This isn't your fault. Come on. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. We're talking about a multi-decade long process. You have to treat it like something.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something I was going to add, actually, is, you know, interviewing Kunal, he brought this up on episode 20. He said, you know, what is it to spend a couple years now? Just accept it's going to take a couple years. It's going to take a few years. Just really drill down and learn what you can now, because this is something you very well might be doing for the next 30 to 40 years. So I think, you know, that's something worthwhile mentioning onto what
say,
you said there.
Yeah, you don't need to be good right now. You have to be good when you have more money, when this is a higher stakes game, when you're highly experienced and you know exactly what to be looking for. That's when you need to be good at trading. You need to keep like a sponge absorbing information until it's your time to strike and dump all of that information back in the market. And it's okay if that's not right now. Traders are so adamant about like proving to others that they're real, that they're using real money. It's like they're so worried about being considered fake. They got to go prove it with real money. I know you. This is what you're going to say. They rush into real trading, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it ties in really well, as many people also seem to be trading knowing that they don't have an edge, like actually knowing they don't have an edge, or they're very unsure about things.
You got to fake it until you make it. They got to just get that experience. And that's what everyone says, right? You got to go really experience the markets to learn anything. And it's like, but I don't know what strategy I should be trading. What am I doing? Am I just watching? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, they kind of, it's like they almost rush into trading real money because they feel like that's what they should be doing. Even though, you know, everyone knows 90 to 95% of traders fail. I mean, I don't know where that statistic came from, but I'd say it's pretty accurate. I'd lean more towards the 95%, but, you know, it's a game where so many people fail, yet people just like rush into it. And I think that's probably the wrong approach.
You know, when people ask, how can that be if there's a winner and a loser to every trade? Well, of course, traders are not equal size, right? There are some disproportionate traders who are much larger and represent thousands and thousands, you know, many, many percent of the failing traders' accounts, all aggregated, are under control of the few separate solid traders. You know, that's your goal, is to be a black hole of wealth, to just absorb and kind of attract money wherever there's an opportunity. Because if you're constantly growing in both skill and in account size, who cares when you get there? You're going to get there. You can rest easy in that and kind of act in a risk-appropriate manner, you know, confident that you will arrive eventually.
Totally. So let's roll into some of the questions that listeners contributed that they want you to answer. So I guess probably the first question is, how did you structure your study when you first started out? I think that's a good place to start, right at the beginning. So how did you first structure your study when starting out?
Well, you remember what I said about Yoda, right? He didn't begin like Yoda. He probably was just, you know, he wasn't a master when he started out. I didn't really structure my study at all because I didn't know that I needed to structure my study. I was one of those traders who thought they needed to get that real-time market experience. I was trading when I was still in college, just the last semester that I was at Tufts up in Boston. And I mean, I think back to, like, I spent a lot of time on Tim Knight's website, Slope of Hope. He's awesome. Evil Speculator, another blog that I spent a lot of time on that I think they're still up and running. I really was seeking to connect with other traders, other people. And when I found chat rooms, it was a step closer to real connection. And eventually, I think I really took it to networking and connecting with traders, kind of an individual connection and study via Skype or the telephone or even just email exchange. And I think that's, you know, we were talking about the social aspect of trading before. Like, networking cannot be overstated. You absolutely must start trying to find other people with whom you can connect, even if it's just other developing traders. I think part of my, like, trading development, really going from, like, an okay trader, an intermediate trader, to a more advanced trader, was counseling other traders with whom I'd interact, almost just, like, just as a peer, as a friend, like, not as a trading coach. I think they saw that I had an aptitude for trading and teaching, and they wanted to learn more about how I was able to pick this up, like, relatively quickly. That encouraged me to kind of evaluate, like, is this reproducible? Is it replicable? Can I counsel others on it? Like, can I observe? Am I self-aware enough? Am I aware of, let's say, others? You might recall, I think, from the first episode we did, so episode 11, the Greek axiom, like, you cannot see that which is in your own knapsack. You can't see the thing you carry on your back. You know what I mean? We all struggle to see our own problems, but it's a lot easier to see the struggles of other traders. And I think, as I was saying to something from a prior question, you don't have to look just up the ladder at who can help you. Sometimes you look further down the ladder to who you can help bring up. That really reaffirms the fundamentals of your own trading game. And that particularly helped me to develop, because it made me ask the question of, like, what are they doing wrong that I also do wrong? And what are they doing right that I could be doing? This kind of goes back to, I think, like, when I worked at a recording studio back in college, I always thought it was easier to gain insight from, like, what not to do from working with amateur artists versus, like, really professional, seasoned, they kind of, like, make it look easy guys. I wanted to know how the developing musicians would screw up so that, like, I could see how other guitarists or other producers or recording engineers would similarly screw up. If the guys I was working with were all just pros, like the best in the business, I'd probably not absorb, like, even 1% of what the pros were doing. They make it look effortless. The struggle of the amateurs, in a way, was a better learning experience for me than watching a seasoned veteran. I think it's the same way with trading. There's real value in being connected to other developing traders. We were just talking about how it's, like, cathartic to hear somebody put a voice to the same struggles you thought you were the only person who ever experienced it. You know, it's very humbling also to realize that even the best capitalized and best, backgrounded people, like the people who, let's say, have a quantitative finance degree. Listen, I love you guys out there, but it may or may not help you. There are plenty of people with quant finance degrees who suck as traders. They may be great systems engineers. They may be great analysts. They may be superior mathematicians. They're probably all out there, like, cursing my name right now. But you know what I'm saying? It's each trader is his own person and needs to be self-aware enough, or needs to know, you know, like we said, your strengths as well as your own weaknesses. So early on, connecting with other traders was such a huge part of me going from being just okay to, like, how am I going to be better than this guy? How am I going to be better than the best? How can I maybe just in a more incremental way, how can I just be a better Zach? I don't need to be Paul Tudor Jones tomorrow. I'm probably not going to be anyway, so why not give up on that dream? It's like the difference between goals and dreams. Dreams are like, one day I'll figure out how to get there. Goals are like, I know how to get there, and all I have to do is X and then Y and then Z. Kind of focusing on the goals for now. You'll get to the dreams. The dreams will come, but they are a series of components. And one of them for me was, like, connecting with other traders, having a more personal engagement and involvement with the markets. I don't know. It would really kind of freak me out if we had to truly be alone as traders. Not only is it fun, it kind of keeps us, in good spirits and it keeps it lively and it's more enjoyable. But I think there's a real educational benefit to it also. Short answer, no structure early on. I was meandering. Like, I went through the struggle too. I took 2 and 3 month long breaks from trading where I really had to ask myself, like, am I cut out for this? Is this the right business for me? Should I be taking my skills and going elsewhere? And this is, 2008, 2009. I'm sure a lot of people were questioning themselves at that point in time. It was a weird feeling back then. And I don't even know if I have enough perspective, because that's right when I came into the market. But I just remember the thought of, so I'm 22. I've got a degree from a good school, and the people I'm competing with have 15 to 20 years experience working at Lehman Brothers or, you know, Bear Stearns or, you know, one of these firms that has let, you know, 150,000 of their employees go, and all of a sudden I'm competing for a job with these guys. I'm outclassed. And that's kind of where I started with trading. I knew it was something I could pick up on relatively quickly. It's something that had always interested me. You know, why not me? And I think that's where every trader kind of starts. It's almost like, you know, maybe I'm not going to be the guy to win the lottery, but couldn't I learn something about price patterns and markets? It's almost like I may not be smart enough to be the next Chaim Bodek, but I'm smart enough to realize that this can be done a better way. You know, maybe it's managing your own retirement. Maybe it is just a pure active trading, like a speculative account. Maybe it's your dream is to enact, like we say, like a quantitative system. I talk to a lot of non-traders who say, you know, it's always been my dream. They're usually engineers, right? Guys who look at the markets and they say, this can't be that difficult. And, of course, I laugh because, you know, you and I know this. Like, oh, it's so much more difficult than you possibly can imagine. I think we said that on the first episode that I did with you. It was, you know, everybody thinks trading is like 8 hours of making, $1,000 an hour and doing cocaine off of a stripper. Like, in reality, it's 20 hours of, like, lonely struggle every day in front of a series of computer screens. It's not quite the glamorous profession everyone would like you to believe, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a bunch of really great points in that answer, Zach. That was awesome. Now, something else that comes up quite often, it was funny, like a lot of the questions were quite similar. Like we seemed to be able to group them fairly well. And one of those questions was, what do you do if you're a young trader with limited capital and or limited time? So what are some of the first steps that a new trader should do who has, you know, a lack of resources and time in terms of like time and capital?
You can pay the tuition of the market in either time or money. You got to pay one. If you don't have money, time is your only option. And so I think you have to make a decision about benefiting future you instead of present you. You have to stop thinking about how am I going to learn this really quickly and start making $1,000 a day with my, you know, $2,000 account. And it's just unrealistic. You have to plan for success later. You know, someone I think once told me it's like, you know, easy achievement is the achievement you can get right now. It's winning in a video game or, you know, betting on a sports match or something like that, right? Hard achievement takes time. That's why it's hard. You do the things that suck, that are difficult, that other people aren't going to do. This goes back to, you know, if you're not working on your edge, someone else is. There are people who will get up at the crack of dawn and work all day later than you'll, you know, stay at the office later than you will. The best you can do is to try and catch up to them. I don't mean you got to put in a ton of time. I mean, this is, I think, the freedom that a lot of traders are seeking. They think they're seeking financial freedom. They're looking for flexibility freedom. They're looking for the ability to, like, be a father, to be a husband, to be a, you know, a friend, to work part-time and trade part-time and not be consumed by this. That's the flexibility. Like, that's the freedom that we are all aspiring to. And I mean, some people I can understand, it's really just a limitation of capital. Once they have more money, they'll feel more free. They can take more time. Like, okay, great. I think it's about, like, if I'm going to be a trader, how am I going to maintain my life? You know, we were joking about like having a personal life. It really is important to have balance in all things. I don't think I traded any better during those 20-hour days and the all-nighter, you know, kind of like trading futures overnight, and then you do a full session of equities, and then you trade another session of futures or equities and then futures and then equities. It doesn't make you trade better. It's not like you get paid hourly for being in the market. I mean, this is a common misconception, right? People tell you, oh, you're a trader. You must make money. It's like, yeah, nobody pays me. I make money if I'm good. I don't get paid for showing up. You know what I mean? That's why you see a lot of guys with no edge just sort of gambling. They're trading for the present. You know, if they win, hey, right? And if not, oh, well, this is as good as it's going to get for them. It's like if a coin flip, if 50-50 was the best the odds would ever be for you, once the odds became 50-50, you'd be like, all right, let's do it. Let's go. This is no better than, you know, no worse than any other shot. For those of us who aspire to have longevity in our careers, we have to figure out how to survive to trade the next day. It's not about making money today. It's about making it to the next day. You know, we as humans, you remember what you're saying, like, you know, it's like, I've been doing this long enough, I'd be embarrassed if I were bad at it. You know, it's like, I feel like you acquire through osmosis, if nothing else, as you last longer and longer in trading, more and more things. There aren't the kind of epiphanies, the eureka moments, the breakthroughs as there are early on in trading. But that's because you're more experienced, right? It's a more nuanced lesson that you may be learning. Maybe it's more of a lesson about yourself rather than a realization of like, oh, so you mean when I go short, I'm betting on the downside? Oh, you know, it's like those kind of initial awakenings you have when you're a trader and you go, I get it. So you can bet on both directions in the market. Huh, how about that? You know, it's not, you're not going to have those massive awakenings later in your trading career, but you are going to continue to develop to the point that if you make it a year in trading, I mean, like, people should respect not the, you know, 20-something-year-old fund managers, the hot hands. You should respect the guys who have been in this business for 40 or 50 years. Longevity is what's to be respected. And you know I'm serious because I'm a 29-year-old hotshot trying to convince you that, you know, I'm the one to be listened to. Now, I really have a tremendous respect for people who have transitioned across multiple market shocks, multiple market regimes, different bull and bear cycles, different presidents, different you know, just different regimes. It's just incredible when you think about how much they've seen. It's like when you look at a 300-year-old tree and you're like, oh, the stories that tree must be able to tell. Can you imagine a trader who's been in the market for 50 years? I think they'd tell you that everything we're seeing today, it's happened before and it will happen again. Actually, this goes back to the earlier question about structuring your study when you start out. Reading Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, the kind of semi-fictional account of Jesse Livermore, that really struck me because it made me realize, like, everything that I'm experiencing, this guy experienced 100 years ago with none of the technology. And he put, you know, great phrasing, very eloquent, elegant way of saying, you know, some of the things that we are still experiencing, that we traders are still struggling with. So the best way is through experience. And that experience, fortunately, can be approximated with simulated trading. Like, anybody who tells you that sim trading is entirely useless probably owns or works at a brokerage firm. They want you to trade because they get paid by your commissions. And so, of course, they're going to call bullshit on sim trading. I mean, look, it's obvious that it lacks the gravitas of real money. I mean, I think that should be obvious if you're just now realizing that, like, simulated trading probably doesn't have the same emotional impact. Maybe trading's not for you. But, like, I've seen students get emotional about sim trading before during a session. Like, then again, I've seen people lose their minds over way stupider stuff than just, you know, the market and simulated trading. You can accrue the experience of technical analysis, of risk management, of juggling multiple trades at the same time. You can get a lot of this experience without risking any money, but you do have to commit time. If you don't want to commit time, go ahead, put $50,000 in your account, start trading. You will learn a lot of lessons, and they will be expensive, expensive lessons, my friend. It's almost like the difference between at a university, they allow you to audit a course, where you can literally just attend. You don't get credit for the course necessarily, but you still get the information, you get the experience. Right now, when you're not a trader, when you're an aspiring trader or an early stage developing trader, give up on getting credit for the course. You just got to go sit in and see if this is all gibberish to you or if it's something that really resonates. What if you found that trading is not for you? Thank goodness you didn't put real money down. And what if you found that trading really is for you? Well, my God, then that's awesome. I mean, you figured out that you're really good at something that can make you thousands of dollars. Either outcome is going to be a positive. So,
yeah, and I'd just like to add on to that. I mean, like, I don't think that having a lack of capital is I don't think that really holds any water. Like, I think that shouldn't act as a barrier and it shouldn't stop you getting into trading because you have so much to learn before you should even consider putting some real money on the line that, you know, having a lack of capital right now should be maybe one of the least of your worries when first getting into trading.
You know, a common thing I hear is, Zach, if I just had $1 million, then I would trade so much better. I'd have enough money to trade a bunch of positions. At the same time, I wouldn't be limited in my sizing. I could scale and scale out. I could blah, blah, blah. You know what I say is, no, you'd be the same crappy trader that you are now. You just have $1 million. You have more money, right? You wouldn't, like, become a different person because you're well-capitalized. You got to respect that, like, learning to trade with 100 shares or 100,000 shares with some obvious differences, impact on the market, execution approach and strategy, right? But, like, you're making the same essential decision. Is this market likely to go higher? If so, then I need to find a way of getting involved in a risk-appropriate fashion. You know, there is no excuse anymore. If this were 20 years ago where there wasn't, you know, simulated trading technology, I know there's, I want to say, like, Market Replay. There's, I think, I want to say Backtest Broker. Thinkorswim has a great feature on demand. I use this with my students all the time. Once they've learned the VWAP trading methodology, we can, like, replay a trading day in, like, fast forward. So we can fit a couple trading days into one session, kind of like sit side by side and, like, tag team the market. We can watch the same simulated day at the same speed, kind of in lockstep. It is incredible the opportunities that this has afforded people. I have traders in different parts of the world or who are working during market hours, and so they would never otherwise be able to trade a real account or even a simulated account. Something like On Demand is awesome because they can trade in the middle of the night. They can trade, you know, in their spare time, whenever it's convenient for them. I think that's a great way of saying it, Aaron. There is no excuse anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I obviously fully agree with that. So in your journey to becoming a profitable trader, would you say that you attribute your success to a few moments and milestones, or was it something gradual and rather the accumulation of many small victories?
I mean, I definitely had the moments. I definitely had the milestones. You know, I think it's like a series of important firsts would be a good way of phrasing it, like your first $1,000 day. And not that, I mean, like, it's more about percentage than dollar, but, like, everybody dreams of making $1,000 in a day, right? I mean, every trader listening to this podcast is probably has thought about, like, oh, man, wouldn't that be a cool, like, level to break? My first week with five profitable days, I felt really good after that. Like your first successful short trade, your first, you know what I mean? There are also negative milestones. First time you've been stuck in a halted company. First time you've filled, like, way below the market due to illiquidity. Like, you know, you've been stopped out and you get at the worst price of the entire day. And you're like, you lost $600 in the blink of an eye just because of a market stop. First time you stay up all night reading Seeking Alpha because you're stuck in a shitty position and you're terrified. Believe me, you have not been a trader until you have freaked out up all night trying to read what other idiots who are stuck in the position are doing and thinking, and when you're just desperate, you're voracious for knowledge. I mean, this brings me back to, like, the earlier answer about being on the blogs and in the chat rooms, and, like, God, that takes me back, that feeling of, like, not knowing what the outcome is. And I think this is the difference between, like, having a system and not having a system. You still won't know the outcome, but you'll know what outcomes you're choosing between, or you're going to, you know, which two outcomes may occur. You'll know what a win looks like, and you'll know what a loss looks like, as opposed to when you don't have a system or an approach, you're terrified. I mean, you could wake up the next day and the stock just drops. And what do you do? Where's your stop? What's your plan? What's your thesis? And I had none of that early on. So I think about those milestones, those kind of moments that stick out. The gradual stuff, look, you eventually have to get fed up with it. Okay, here we go. It's sort of like when you grow up with your nutrition. You kind of turn into an adult and say, all right, I got to have some vegetables. Like, I've eaten nothing but Pringles and soda for the last 20 years of my life. It's time to maybe give my body something better. You get more mature about what you put in to your trading brain. You know, are you reading the same annoying guys on Twitter who you just think are funny? They may not be very insightful, but whatever. You know, are you listening to the same market recap just because that's what you've always listened to? You know, okay, I don't know this guy, so I'm gonna talk a little shit. Oscar, what's his name? Oscar Carboni. He's a guy who does, like, market recap videos. I remember watching him back in like 2008, 2009, and it was just like a habit. It was just a thing that I watched because I just when I started, and I caught myself like a year into trading. I was still watching those videos. They didn't give me any information whatsoever, but it was just habit. It was part of my routine, and it's almost like a bad habit that I had picked up. You need to start asking yourself, what are the bad habits? Who are the useless traders that I talk to, that I commiserate with, just because we're buddies? It doesn't mean you can't talk to them, but stop comparing notes about the next day. They're probably not that useful anyway. Find someone who you really genuinely admire their work ethic and ask if you can just sit silently with them on Skype and listen to them, you know, go through their prep or something. Be a sponge. You know what I mean? That's what's going to help you with the sort of gradual wins rather than the massive milestone. Like, look, obviously I'm going to say something like, well, when I first found VWAP, that really clicked with me. But even that, it took me a while to really appreciate what I had. I thought it was just another indicator. I had become so jaded with all of the other indicators and, like, you know, being told, well, all you have to do is use a fast stochastic. That's the key. Or, you know, whatever someone else has told you is going to work and it's just designed to make you feel better. You know what I mean? There will be those breakpoints, those kind of aha moments, the eureka, the epiphany. But they're few and far between. And like I said, they get fewer and fewer as you go on in trading. It's just refining a process and not screwing up the results. Your results should reflect more of your system than your personality. You know what I mean? It's like, it should be more about your design, your plotting of the course, rather than, oh, well, I grabbed the steering wheel and turned the car at the last minute and, you know, I screwed this up. It's like, don't make discretionary mistakes. Make systematic mistakes if you're going to make them. Make something that you can evaluate and then learn from and then change, rather than, oh, well, I got nervous at the very last second and then I stopped out. You know what I mean? That's shooting from the hip. That's undisciplined behavior. You may not be a robot, but my God, you can be a more disciplined human. You can be a more mechanical human, let's say, right?
Yeah, I really like that answer. That's excellent. And I also really like this question that someone sent in. I think this is spot on. They say, rather than what did you do to become profitable, what did you stop doing to become profitable? I think it probably leads on from that last question a little bit, but yeah.
So I noticed that taking losing trades was really negatively impacting my profitability. So just by eliminating losers from my trading record entirely, that I'm messing around, obviously. That's like somebody telling, well, you know, I learned the secret was to buy low, and then this is the key, to sell high, actually. Sincere answer, what did I stop doing? I stopped trying to get a better price. I was always that guy who, like, I would see the setup and I would say to myself, just two more cents, just two more pennies, because that's, you know, if I'm trading 300 shares, it's going to be $6. That'll cover commissions or something. I'd rationalize to myself, just a little more, just a little more, just a little more. And that's like that's poking the bear a little bit. That's like, you know, that's like it's like, you know, pushing someone's buttons. You know you're messing with them a little bit, but you're just pushing them to see how far they'll go. Eventually, the stock is going to take off and move without you. And you're going to be like, ah, damn it, I missed it because I was trying to get that, you know, that best price. And same with the exit. The Jesse Livermore quote is, the most expensive eighth is the first eighth and the last eighth. And, of course, that's like when it, you know, stocks were still trading in eighths. So the first tick and the last tick, or the first penny and the last penny. I've seen so many traders ride a terrible position, not often to the sunset, but what's the opposite? Like often to the abyss, you know, directly into the sun, right? They, you know, ride it into hell because they didn't give up on the position when it came back to break even. They said, well, what about 5 cents above break even? That'll cover commissions. And it's almost like penny wise, pound foolish. Right? That's a common mistake. When you see a setup, your job is to get in the trade in a risk-appropriate fashion. It doesn't mean, oh, just buy it willy-nilly, sort of like wherever. But it definitely means be more humble about being perfect. You're not going to be perfect. You're not. Like, no offense, but you're listening to a podcast with other traders talking about how to be perfect. You are not perfect. you, listener of the podcast right now, probably not perfect. Truth be told, Aaron and I also very much not perfect. I think you guys have realized that by now. But giving up on perfection. This kind of goes back to like what I said in the ebook, right? Stop trying to prove it to your girlfriend, to your family, to your trader friends, that you're an awesome trader. Just dissociate from the identity of being a trader. Give up on proving to others or bragging about it, or it's all fluff. It's just the fluff that we fill ourselves up with before we make the leap to the more nutritious kind of substantive meals for our trading brain, right? Here's another one. I mean, this applies to what you're doing with coding and quantitative trading. I stopped expecting one system to encompass the entire market. So early on, this particularly in my trading career, my coding career within trading, I was trying to make one system to rule them all, like one system to fit all. And I realize now that markets that are going through different regimes are like different weather. You've got to dress differently. Yeah, it's all outdoors, but it's cold outdoors or sunny outdoors or windy outdoors or rainy outdoors. They're very different styles of just going outdoors. It's not quite that simple. It's not so simple to be able to say, well, I'll code something to reflect every different outcome within the market. There are too many different permutations. The best you can do is build, you know, like think about like building a trap. You can't build one trap to catch every animal out there that you're trying to trap. You have to build different traps for squirrels or for a fox or for a, you know, I don't know, a wild hog, or I don't know, what are other people trap? I'm not much of a hunter, but you know what I'm saying, right? You have to build different traps for the different creature you're trying to pursue. Similarly, for different setups, there's a totally different system. And how nice and flexible it is. It's like giving, instead of one single system, one equation to fit them all, you kind of let the system flex to, you know, encompass the entirety of the market. The up days, the down days, the sideways days, the up days that become down days, the up days that become sideways days, and vice versa, and every permutation of that. No one system is gonna kill them all. And I'll tell you, if you do come up with that system, the one system that works for everything, please give me a call. I'll leave my email address at the end because I'll buy it from you. I'm kidding, of course. Like, it's the Holy Grail. I mean, that is a really great question because it talks about not just what is the secret to trading, but what do traders do thinking that they're doing it right? It's like driving through a skid in a car. Sometimes you're oversteering. You're overcorrecting. It's like you're doing too much. I often teach people, like, when you get in a good trend trade, your job is to go into a coma, is to forget that you're in that trade. If you're in a trend, think about it. Literally, it's probably moving in your favor. Check back in on it. You know, wake up every now and then. But, like, you can kind of forget that you have to watch it like a hawk. You don't need to be so intent on every candle matters. Not every candle is created equally. Not every candle matters. And therefore, you kind of need to be an overseer of different systems, of different setups, of different price patterns. You have to be a manager of trades, not a trader. I know that sounds weird. I mean, that's okay. There we go. Another title for my book, right? Don't Be a Trader by Zach Hurwitz. You know what I mean? Wouldn't that be a great name for a book about trading? Don't be a trader. Anyway. All right. Sorry. Long-winded answer.
No, that's awesome. That's really good. So this one here is kind of like a two-part question, I guess. So when is the right time to seek out a mentor or some sort of education? And how does one go about selecting a mentor from all the folks out there offering their services? Like, how can they drill down on one that's right for them?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of when's the definition point of when you plateau. That's a good open-ended answer. When you reach a point of absence of development, where you're not getting worse, but you're just not getting better. That's usually when people seek out trading education. Whenever there's and there are multiple plateaus throughout the trading kind of trajectory, if you will. When you go from an aspiring trader to a novice trader, then you kind of flatline for a while, start making some breakthroughs, really get into where you're being realistic about risk management and having to be disciplined and consistent, then you become an intermediate trader. Then you plateau for another couple months or a year. At each breakpoint, that's usually when people want to say, even if I can't get there right now, what do I need to be doing to get closer or, you know, headed more in that direction? You know, I honestly, something I see a lot, and I actually, I've kept abreast of a lot of the sort of trading education out there for obvious reasons, as I'm a trading educator myself. Like, you want to find somebody who's a good trader, but you really want to find somebody who's a great teacher. And everybody's focused on, like, finding a good trader. They can be a millionaire and the worst communicator. It could be totally unrelatable. It could be kind of a dick. It doesn't help you, right? Like, seeing excellence is not as helpful as you think. You remember what I was saying about, like, working in a recording studio? Like, the pros make it look easy. You watch Jimi Hendrix play a solo, and it just looks like what he is born to do. You watch some idiot try and, like, half-ass their way through, a Jimi Hendrix solo. Like, you're going to see, oh, wow, look, he's not tuned correctly. He bent that note, a couple cents off the right note. I can see here. You can see so much more from I don't know how else to say it, from somebody who is ready to be a good communicator and connect, I guess, what the elements of good trading are, rather than just, hey, watch me do it. You know, I can show you. It's not always that simple. They have to be the right type of teacher, not just the right type of trader. I think for a lot of these guys, no names, right? But they're just marketers. They're entertainers. I think for them, teaching is a chore. You obviously want to find somebody who, I don't want to say is going to put up with you, but who, it's not a chore for them. You want to find somebody who's, like, really all about teaching traders and is going to be understanding with wherever you are as a trader. They're not going to be frustrated that you're not moving faster or that you are moving quickly. Some people will say, but you got to go through my entire course offering. It's like, well, but what if I'm picking up on it more quickly, dude? I don't need that much education. You want to find somebody who's going to fit to your speed. I mean, the same way that we talk about finding a trading style that fits to your personality. You know, I think it reaffirms the foundation of my own trading and system, and it challenges me to reproduce it. Like, that's what I like about being kind of a mentor or an educator. I think when it comes down to it, you should be treated as an intelligent trader who wants to improve, not like a radio receiver for their marketing campaign. That is a huge distinction. And I only say that because there are so many people who are just marketers. On the flip side of that, I love it when you can see somebody who is so genuine and psyched about talking about trading. Like, you mentioned Dan Shapiro. He's awesome. I know him from my Sang Lucy days. He immediately comes to mind. You can just tell that guy, like, eats, breathes, like, sleeps and shits trading. You know what I mean? Yeah. I, as far as selecting someone from everyone who's out there, look for somebody who's also willing to, you know, take a little bit of time listening to you, because it's really not about you having to pick up on everything. It's about the mentor finding, you know, what's the recipe for success for you. Every, whether it's deductive or inductive learner, whether it's visual or experiential, or auditory, right? You like listening to people talk about it. And different styles of learning. I wish I had been an English teacher for a couple of years. I think it would have made me an even better coach. But just, you know, learning about the different styles of student that you're going to get. You want to find a coach who's going to pay attention to that. I think it's also worth saying, just so people know, I'm not talking my own book. Guys, there are thousands of great trading educators out there. There are a lot of people who aren't actual trading coaches, but who are going to be great trading allies. There are people out there, probably some great unknowns that I hope Aaron's going to have on between, you know, episode 50 and 75 or 50 and 100, who you'll probably hear from. Find somebody who resonates with you, who when you hear someone talk, you say, I could listen to that guy talk about this for hours. And obviously, I guess we're like almost 2 hours into the podcast. If you're bored with us talking right now, then don't seek us out for education. No, I'm just messing around. But, yeah, find somebody who you feel like you could hang out with, who you could talk with. Somebody who is both entertaining and relatable, certainly that's important, but a really good teacher and a good communicator.
Yeah, well said, Zach. Emotions is a big one, right? So we hear it all the time. Do you really feel almost no emotion with a systems-based approach? I mean, this is kind of maybe a common myth that some people might have the wrong perception on. I mean, even with a strategy to trade, you must get frustrated at times, right? Would you be able to expand on this a little bit?
Oh, man. Yeah, I still get frustrated a lot. And those of you who know me know that I like to like preach this kind of easygoing, even-keeled attitude. Like, look, everybody's going to get pissed. You're going to get frustrated that you're emphasizing the wrong system on the wrong type of day. So even the system's doing all the work for trading and identifying the trades and managing them, but you know, you're emphasizing or paying more attention to the wrong type of system. There are days that, I'm very upset at myself, but okay, you can't eliminate risk. You can minimize it. You can't eliminate fear. You can manage it. That way you're going to have like strategic regrets. You're not going to have tactical regrets. This is the whole, like, I'd rather run aground because I charted the course incorrectly than because I like tried to steer the ship or the car or whatever, on a whim. That makes me feel dumb when I try and act on my trading plan and actively screw it up. That's when I beat myself up. That's when the poisonous self-talk. That's when like the bile and the poison Zach comes back out. All systems lose money. Great systems lose less. So think about that. All systems are going to have terrible days. They're going to make 10 losing trades in a row. You're going to doubt yourself. You're going to doubt that you were ever a good trader. You're going to doubt that the data is right. Oh my God. You're going to doubt everything. And then you're going to get over it. You're going to get over the doubt and disillusionment and disbelief and frustration. And I think I read somewhere about eventually you're going to get over all this bullshit and it's going to be worth it. And that really stuck with me. It's true. You're going to find little things that you say, I may not be a genius, but I know what a bull flag looks like, and this is a bull flag. And then it breaks outward and upward of the bull flag, and you're long, and you're saying, hey, I may not be the best, but I'm learning. I'm getting better. You got to take the small victories and remind yourself for every time. Like if you – I say this all the time. It's almost like if you take the cow, you deserve the milk. So that's like the old phrase, if you want the milk, you got to take the cow. Like if you want the upside, you got to take the downside. If you are going to hold yourself accountable for all the failures, you deserve a little bit of the patting yourself on the back when you do it right. Like this isn't all luck when you do it right, and it's all your fault when you do it wrong. So I try and remind myself, what's one thing that I've done right today? What's a good trade that I – what's a good read that I had? Where did I dodge a really shitty trade? Actually, it's really funny. So we talk about how like trading and life work together. This is a good strategy for a fight. If you're fighting with your girlfriend or your significant other, just say, honey, just say one nice thing about me. I'm going to say one nice thing about you. Let's just remind ourselves that we actually like each other. You know what I mean? Like when you're deep in a fight. Similarly, you got to you're not accountable to anyone else in trading. You have to be both your supervisor. You have to bear down on yourself. And you have to indulge and kind of remind yourself, you're a good person, you're a good trader, and you're going to make it. You have to be both the superego and the id, as I think I've said in prior interviews. If it's a trading plan that you don't have to trust yourself to follow because it's a system, like there is no alternative, that's a trading plan that I could follow. Like, remember that I'm a human being. I'm going to have days where I want to click the mouse more than the system says I should. There are days where I'm going to get nervous and want to stop out of a trade. One of my trader friends runs a stopless reversionary system, and he's like, oh man, was that a wake-up call? Some days where I'm looking at these trades and they are just crushing me, but I realize this is a statistically profitable event, and it may not work this time, but it's part of my plan. I'm trading small enough risk to where even if this totally botches me and totally screws me, I'm still a small loss. I can afford to take this loss because it's within my plan. Losses that are outside of my plan, like that's when I start. That's what tilts me so hard, when I make mistakes that are outside of my plan, right? If I can have losing trades, that's not a mistake. A mistake is when I deviate from the path.
Okay, sure. That's excellent. Now, Zach, we had a few questions that came in around scanning. I know we've still got a bit to get through, so I'm going to try and merge these together. How do you go about finding setups that meet your criteria? What tools do you use and what tools are helpful for you? And are there certain filters that you find are really good at narrowing down a long list of stocks?
There's quite a few products that you can use. The products that I have used in the past, so I've used my brokerage platform, Thinkorswim, but almost every brokerage has some sort of good basic scanning or filtering feature. Finviz.com, Finviz.com, I'm sure everybody knows about that. There is like the third-party alerts program that I use. Anybody who's more interested in hearing about that, obviously shoot me an email, tradingcoachz@gmail. Happy to tell you more about that. When it comes down to like what filters or what do you use, you got to make it more general. I don't think there's like any one set of filters. It's not like you can look for a certain grouping of stocks and that's the grouping you should be looking for. It's different, obviously, for every trading style. If you think generically about scanning, I always pare it down into like there's three layers to scanning. There's like universals. These are things that are true at the very beginning of the trading day. Like it's a U.S. domestic stock. It's closing over $10 a share. It's got a million shares on average over the last 20 days. I'm just making this up. But these are like universals, things that are universally true that make up the realm of potential, candidates for you. Then there's conditions, which is the next, nuanced layer, which is sort of things that must already be true but can change throughout the day. It's, let's say, above a VWAP. Its RSI is below 20. I'm making these up. Just conditions, things that must already be true. And then finally, there's triggers, elements about the setup that when they hit, like that's when you want to know about the trade. That's the shortest term, the most responsive aspect of all three. So universals, conditions, and triggers. And you start realizing like what sophistication with which you're scanning the market based on, am I doing more universals? Because if I am, I'm probably on finviz.com. I'm probably doing like a daily level filter for, what meets my broad criteria. If I'm doing conditions, I'm trying to, filter down even further from the 1,000 stocks I could trade into maybe the 100 stocks that I might want to trade today. And then triggers, which is what I'm using, record for me the exact moment that all of my criteria were met. And if I were a perfect robot, I would have taken this trade. That's when it gets into like triggers. What is the actual event? What is the aspect, the facet that changes ever so slightly? And that's the trigger to get into the trade. I know a lot of like people are going to want me to give some like actual answer to this. Some common ones that I hear in terms of filters that I would agree with. So things that I either use or other traders I know use. Average volume versus current volume. So you can think of this like volume normalized or relative volume or like a volume multiple. I've heard all of these phrases before. What is today's volume versus the average historical? Because you can quickly get a sense like, wait, we're trading three times the average day's volume and it's like 11 o'clock in the morning. Oh my God, that's a heavily traded stock for the day. Kind of gives you an idea of where participation is surging. I personally track things like standard deviation width, just because that to me is a measurement of like relative opportunity, how much width there is on a chart for me to capture. And for every chart, every trader, it's going to be different on every chart. Some traders watch average true range, ADX, a measure of kind of trendingness of a stock, the average directional index. These are just the kind of common ones that I've seen across many different traders that seem to be helpful. None of these are the triggers. These are more like conditions or universals. Triggers are obviously up to each trader to decide where am I on that spectrum of like responsive or credible. Am I trying to be more responsive where I get a lot of signals, but a lot of the signals are kind of crappy? Or am I willing to wait for a confirmation? I'm going to be patient. I'm going to get a worse price than the responsive guy, but I'm going to make absolutely sure that I'm getting, you know, a confirmed signal. There are trade-offs to each one, of course, and there's no right answer, but I hate to say that. I wish there was a right answer. It's like, oh, yeah, you just got to pick a responsive. You know, just don't worry about being credible. Just get a bunch of signals. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really liked how you explained those three layers. I think that's really helpful in terms of how to think about approaching the scanning process. I think universals, conditions, triggers, I think that's spot on. That's really good.
And if there's anybody, I know I'm doing a dangerous thing. I already did one dangerous thing in this podcast, telling 10,000 people that I used to listen to Creed. But if you have questions about the scanning process, if you're curious about how to scan better, how to do better, what I use, anything more about this, sincerely, shoot me an email. Right? I mean, this is what I'm here for. This is what, you know, other traders are here for. I'm eager to talk to people who are going through this, especially if you can write it out in bullet points. It's almost like there's an old traderism of, if you can write it logically, then it can be coded. If it can be coded, it can be backtested. If it can be backtested, it can be vetted. And if it's vetted, then my God, you've got a good system. Go trade that with confidence. And if not, if it's crap, well, thank goodness, you've just dodged a bullet, right? You were almost trading this really crappy system. So start with that logical outlining. Write it in plain English. I really mean this. In the emails that I'm going to be getting, I really hope there's a lot of bullet points and bonus points, extra credit for you guys if you use universals, conditions, and triggers. Because I think it's a good way of organizing sort of like, where do I stand? Am I doing like zoomed out filtering, or am I doing really microscopic zoomed in analysis and searching?
Okay, excellent. Now, there's obviously a bunch of questions we received around VWAP. Okay, people know you as the VWAP guy.
what's VWAP? I'm not familiar with that, Aaron.
Well, let's tackle that. So, for anyone who might have maybe forgotten or isn't really familiar with VWAP, let's just give us a quick overview of how you incorporate VWAP into your trading.
All right, this is going to be a challenge, right? For anybody who knows me, you know how talkative I am. I'm sure you can tell on this podcast already, so I'll try and be swift. VWAP is a more accurate, honest average price. It's a benchmark line that institutional traders have used for decades. It moves proportionally more or less to reflect the current bar's volume as a function of the day's total volume. So, like, simply put, if there's high volume, there's more impact on the average. If there's low volume, there's very little impact on the average. It starts every day at the beginning of the market. It resets at market close. So it's giving you a day's cumulative average price. There's no periodicity to it. VWAP kind of reflects the democracy of the market more accurately, I like to say. It's like one vote per share, not one vote per trader. So there's a lot of, you know, shares maybe to one trader, and therefore that trader gets to vote many more times in this hypothetical democracy. It's like the Animal Farm quote from George Orwell, one of my favorite authors. All animals are created equal, but some animals are more equal than others. It's kind of ridiculous doublespeak, but seriously, like, some traders are more important than others. We kind of have to admit that. And so we more accurately reflect that democracy by affording more significance to the bigger volume bars, and therefore to the bigger traders. We all know, like, we intuitively, we know that the big traders move the market. So why shouldn't we account for that with our technical analysis? And the institutions use it literally every day. And I mean that literally every day to determine where and sort of how aggressively to enter or exit their positions. I think it's about time that retail traders understood the market around us a little bit better. I think VWAP is a first but huge step for many traders that I speak with. I would say you don't need much preparation or nightly research. There's no need to watch the news or read the tape. It's pattern-based. I've made the strategy very visual, color-coded, easy to learn. I think it's all about, what are the big traders using to enter or exit a trade? And the answer is often a VWAP-based execution assist algorithm, sometimes called like a guaranteed VWAP order. And that may be a big mouthful, but it's basically, haven't you ever wondered what the professional, what the institutional traders are watching? Haven't you ever kind of considered that maybe there's something else out there? And that's volume weighted average price. I was lucky enough to have learned about it in my own retail trading career, you know?
Okay. So VWAP's quite commonly used on an intraday time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Are there variations of the VWAP strategy to account for maybe different markets or different time frames? Could you share with us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I have been a productive, you know, busy little beaver in the coding world. I've created like a dozen custom indicators. I created them not only while I myself was developing my own VWAP approach, but afterwards, as I had more and more students who would request, hey, man, could you visualize this for me? Or could you put a label on my charts to tell me when something's happened? So, yes, I've created a ton of different sort of variations on VWAP. But I think the philosophy of an intraday VWAP, obviously an intraday market, as I was describing, starts early in the morning, resets at the end of the day. That's the plain vanilla intraday VWAP. Then there's an ongoing, or as I call it, kind of a multi-day VWAP, which is essentially a continuation VWAP over the course of more than one day. It's the same math, but it's applied to 2 days, to 5 days, to 20 days, for example. And this gives us a more intermediate term benchmark. So this is more for swing traders or day traders who are looking at multiple days for context. So I'm a big fan of like a five-day chart. Tracking these more intermediate term volume-weighted average prices give us the same otherwise hidden support and resistance that we look for with a VWAP, but applied to longer and longer time frames. And so people may say, like, why? Wait a minute. Didn't you just tell me that these institutional traders, they care about the intraday VWAP? The key is that the intraday, you know, institutional traders are often trading in a much longer time frame than we retail traders. Like, we click the mouse and we're in a trade instantaneously or almost instantaneously. If we were trading 100,000 shares or a couple million dollars worth of any given stock, it's going to take us a couple hours to fill. It may even take us multiple days. And so that's where the multi-day VWAP strategy kind of stems from. It also is very intuitive that if something important happens, like a turning point or a tipping point or what I call like an incident day, we're going to want to know what the definitional line, the average price since a given event. So in the same way we talk about VWAP as being like since the market open, what's the average price? And that's a pretty common question, right? I mean, we all kind of wonder that. What's the average price for the day? But the tools that we had been given is this, you know, periodic moving averages that we had to set. Well, it's 128 bars into the day, and therefore it's 128 bar moving average. That just gets too clunky. And even the plain vanilla VWAP wasn't quite enough. Plain vanilla VWAP and multi-day VWAP. I've created a variety of other indicators, visualizations, and custom watch list columns for Thinkorswim that my traders use. I personally teach four trade types for the intraday market, and then multi-day VWAP, which is its own little segment. And that's predominantly for swing traders, like I said, but also for intraday traders who are looking for longer-term support or resistance.
Do you find that VWAP becomes less effective the more you zoom out on a time frame, or does it sort of serve a different purpose? Like you mentioned there, intraday is obviously for day traders, and then the multi-days are more aimed at swing traders or those looking for stronger points of support and resistance. Is it still effective, using a multi-day VWAP? Is that also just as effective or almost as effective as an intraday VWAP?
Sure. So, I mean, categorically, you're going to, just by the nature of the way a VWAP is calculated, as you add more and more volume into the total volume part of the comparison, because you remember a VWAP compares the current bar's volume to the total cumulative since inception. As you get 2, 3, 5, whatever days away from the inception of the VWAP, you're dealing with a larger and larger and larger accumulation of total volume. And so each bar that gets added to the calculation impacts it proportionally less. So sort of like human beings, as we get older, we slow down a little bit. Similarly, we're going to get further and further away from the VWAP the longer of a time frame over which we assess the VWAP. And that's just the nature of the calculation. It is going to get less responsive the longer and longer we take a VWAP over, right? But that's kind of how it should react when you think about it. We're asking for an accumulation of more and more market data. We're trying to encompass uptrends and downtrends, and maybe even if we stretch out to a longer time frame, you know, bull markets and bear markets and totally different regimes. It's really going to be a challenge for a cumulative average price to fit very closely to the market. And so when you zoom out to a longer time frame, that definitely makes a case for other moving averages. But what I've found is when you're looking particularly in that, I call it the sweet spot, between 1 and 5 days, you're dealing with intraday traders or short-term swing traders or people who are trying to execute a trade over the course of, let's say, 2, 3, or 5 days, these, let's say, a large hedge fund or a mutual fund, that they can't trade their entirety of their position in 1 day. You talk to these guys who are managing $20-some billion. They don't make a decision on a whim, right? I mean, they have to go to the investment committee, and then it gets approved and heads back to the execution team who's actually going to enact the order over the course of the next couple days. Watching a multi-day VWAP has been one of the bigger breakthroughs I've personally had in my own VWAP education, thinking that it was solely intraday. And then kind of realizing, well, it's a natural extension, pun intended, to extend it on into the next day.
Okay, sure. So what markets is it most effective in? Does it work in options markets? What about Forex, futures? Or, I mean, you obviously use it in equities predominantly.
Sure.
Is it just as effective in other markets, or can it even be applied to other markets?
Yeah, so without sounding like a blanket, oh my God, of course, it applies to absolutely everything under the sun. It applies best to equities, best to liquid, large cap, algorithmically controlled equities. I hate to say this, it does not work on that $3 little biotech stock. It doesn't work as well. It probably still applies, but the less granularity you have, so the smaller the price of a stock, the harder it is to really see the type of action that we're looking for on a VWAP. You want to see something that is fluid and mobile and, you know, very liquid, and something that other VWAP algos are probably acting on this stock. It definitely applies to futures. I've coached quite a few futures traders in the last 2 months, particularly. It seems like the futures traders came out of the woodwork. Forex, without a centralized volume number, and there is no centralized Forex volume, we can't get a VWAP of like Euro USD, like the pure pair, but we can approximate it by looking at, so for all you thinkorswim users, /6E would be the Euro futures code. You can use volume weighted average price on the futures proxy, if you will, for the underlying. So you can do that obviously with all the major currencies as they relate to the dollar. So that's kind of a workaround in the meantime. You know, I used to say that this only worked on large cap equities. I realized that, you know, KBIO, among many other, recent sort of momentum names, have shown me that it's really VWAP works best wherever there's other traders trying to execute orders. And that sounds like pretty much every stock under the sun. So I hate to give a bold, generic, all-encompassing kind of answer like that. I'd be cautious with Forex just because the lack of centralized volume, and you're dealing with a proxy. You're dealing with another contract that's supposed to reflect or relate somewhat of the volume, but it can't really show you the actual volume. As far as options go, because you asked about that too, let me answer that two ways. Like, yes, you can chart an option with VWAP, and that's actually something a couple of my students have pointed out to me. They said, I threw an option chart up there, and did you notice some of the same trade types that you taught me are applying here on the option? And that's not obviously rocket science. If they are tied to the underlying, which is the price chart of the stock, and the stock is exhibiting some sort of pattern, options probably going to reflect that as well. But similarly, yes, the VWAP strategy can be used with carefully chosen strikes and risk tolerances. You just got to be careful you're not going to get destroyed by the Greeks because you're trading a totally technical approach, oblivious to the to the components of the options pricing model. So in that case, you couldn't blame anyone but yourself. You're trading a product designed for risk insurance, like it's a leveraged little vehicle for your trading purposes. It's like using the wrong end of your spoon to eat your cereal. Like, you shouldn't be surprised if that sucks. You're not using it for the way it was designed. You know what I mean? You can't hold the inventor of the spoon accountable if you misuse it. So I'm cautious with options. But yes, it can be done. And certainly anywhere where the underlying, the actual equity, is moving quite clearly according to a VWAP, you know, absolutely. That's where there's no reason not to take that additional leverage, particularly if you are a skilled options trader and you're good at selecting the right strike.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, that's great. A few people have asked, what are some good VWAP resources? I mean, they're pretty few and far between from what I've seen online, but maybe you could share some insight on that.
Okay, look, I have to plug my own website here because it's literally thevwap.com. I feel like that's a fairly safe bet. If you want to go learn about the VWAP, you might want to check that out. You know, I thought about zachhurwitz.com, but I don't think my name is yet synonymous with VWAP. I'm working on it. Everything else that's out there is literally a quick Google away. So I can't say, oh, you should just check out so-and-so's blog. They've got everything on there. What I've seen on YouTube is literally laughably weak. And I'm even thinking about some of the interviews I've done in the past. I need to – you know what? Okay, how about that? I've got to change that. That's my trader resolution for 2016. My job is to put everyone else talking about VWAP to shame. I got to put so much content out there so that this question never gets asked again. And I say that in obviously a very positive way. I'm not upset. People are frustrated that there's not, you know, better resources for the VWAP. I think everyone will tell you the basics. No one will tell you the nuance, it seems. And that's what I'm trying to change. I mean, I've spent 4.5, 5 years of my life doing nothing but this. I've become a very boring person and an expert trader in this regard. You know, I've sacrificed many hours of being cool in order to be good, because I realized that this is what's going to define me for the next several decades. This is how I'm going to make a name for myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you can put some more quality resources out there on VWAP, I think many would really appreciate that, and obviously would have somewhere to go to find out more about it, because like I mentioned, it is pretty scarce.
No, you're absolutely right. What I should say, so on the first podcast, on episode 11, first podcast in which I appeared, I made the offer of anybody who wants to reach out and talk to me about their trading, or more specifically about VWAP, I will give you a free 30, 60-ish minute consult. That still stands, and you know, I'll let that keep going through, let's say, I don't know, like what, the one-year anniversary of that podcast, so like mid-March or something of 2016. Anybody who's still curious about this stuff, like, don't go hunting on the internet for it. Just shoot me an email. Shoot me a chat. We'll talk about it. I'll answer whatever questions I can for you.
Okay, and what is your email address?
So it's tradingcoachz@gmail.com, tradingcoachz@gmail.com.
All right, good one. Well, awesome offer. I mean, really appreciate it. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of people take you up on that, which is excellent.
Do you remember after that episode when we were doing the follow-up call, like shortly after we had just like stopped recording, and you were like, do you realize what you've done? Do you know what you've just gotten yourself into? Like, I've got thousands of listeners every week, Zach. You're going to be swamped. And I remember being so arrogant as to think, like, oh, come on. Like, I'm a nobody. Nobody knows me. Nobody's going to listen to my episode even. Like, I just thought it was cool what you were doing. You know, you and I were kind of buddies early on, and we were like, why not? Well, now here we are. I'm still getting, you know, 10 emails a week or so. But how I'm sure it's the same with you. Like, when you hear an email from somebody who's like, oh, I love the podcast. It's really uplifted me and kind of kept me going. Like, that's what keeps you going, isn't it, Aaron? Like, isn't that partially why you're doing this? It's not just selfish about your own trading. It's about seeing what you can do for others.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I love to hear that it is beneficial to others as well. And I mean, going off the feedback I get, I think it is. So, and plus, you know, I want to make it bigger and better going forward as well. So always trying to improve. So let's change gears a little bit. Keep moving off VWAP there. Exits. Exits was another topic that seemed to pop up a little bit. People kind of seem to feel like there's more emphasis out there on when's a good time to get into the market. Like, when's a good time to put on a trade. Like, trade location seems to be quite big for many people. But where they struggle with is exiting those positions. So what should a trader think about in terms of exits? Like, I know it's going to vary depending on their approach, but what's a good way to think about exits?
I feel like you have to know what type of trader you are. I feel like you have to say before you put the trade on even, I am a scalper. I'm going to take this target. It is short term. It will probably keep going. I will probably want to punch myself in the face, and that's fine because there will be another scalp that I will take. Or I'm a position trader. My job is to, like, this is sort of like what I am, right? I want to hold this for a couple hours. I want to trade it in through the end of the day because if it's trending, it's going to keep rewarding me. Or, you know, I'm looking for a swing entry. I am not going to exit this position today no matter what. I mean, unless it hits, let's say, my price stop. I'm going to give it a day at least to see how I feel with it before I start adjusting my target or pulling the stop higher. I see traders get into trouble a lot when they put the trade on, the trade looks good, it's going in their favor, and then they go, oh, shit, I got to have a plan for this. Wait a minute. But, you know, it's like the roller coaster is already going down the track at that point. And I don't mean necessarily down against them. I just mean it's already happening so quickly. Traders will either get overexcited or, you know, maybe even discouraged if it's not taking on, you know, it's not moving very much. I personally like that approach, by the way. If it's not moving within, let's say, 10 candles, or if it hasn't become profitable by a certain degree within 30, let's say, 1 minute candles, within 30 minutes, giving yourself almost like a time stop. What ends up happening is you'll notice the positions that I sit in for a long time that go nowhere, it's almost like I'm waiting with a ton of exposure, a ton of risk, and no real upside. The trades that I'm the most right about, and think about your own trading when you hear this, like, don't they immediately alert you to how freaking awesome they are? They just immediately take off, right? They rally. They pull back and hit support, and then they rally again, and they break to new highs. They're almost unequivocally good trades. They are evident. I mean, I think the same thing about, like, a trader when you meet them, and I'm sure you've had this, like, you know, your trader friends. You meet somebody, and you just are like, wow, that guy is just a positive force for somebody. He's prepared. He's helping others. He's got a good mindset. He's even keeled. It's like, I don't know, it takes a lot of inspiration. From that, you want to have, like you said about your own episodes, guests, you want to have great clarity of your personality. Who are you and what are you trying to accomplish? Because if you just put it in practice of, oh, I'll put a trade on and figure it out. I think those are the most famous last words in trading. Let's just give it a little room and, you know, or let's just see what happens. And it never ends well. You know what I mean? You have to define your criteria for exit ahead of time. You have to know what type of trader you are. Yeah,
absolutely. That's really valid advice. So I really appreciate you sharing that, Zach. I'm just looking at the other questions we've got on the list here. Psychology, coaching, and that. I think we've pretty much covered all of those throughout our other answers. So
You don't want to talk for another hour and a half?
I'm hoping we've still got a few people hanging in there listening.
I know. I was going to say, to everyone who's made it through another 2 hours of Aaron and I babbling at each other, no, sincerely, like, thank you. And I got to say, Aaron, on behalf of every one of the 500,000 downloads, really, man, thank you for everything that you do for the trading community. We were just talking about these people who are like a force for good in the world, and I've heard it universally from everyone. I know you have a few haters out there, and I did actually, guys, I tried to get Aaron to let me make him read mean tweets about the podcast because I think that'd be hilarious, but I don't think we have time. We'll have to save that for maybe episode 75 or something like that.
That'll creep up soon as well.
Aaron, thank you so much for having me on, and keep doing what you're doing, man. I know you've got a few things that you want to say about the plans for the podcast going forward, too. I mean, I'm sure people want to know, what are the next 25 or 50 episodes going to be like?
Yeah, so, I mean, some of the things that I plan on, you know, what can people expect going forward from this point on, I will be taking on sponsors for the podcast. So they'll be pretty unobtrusive, but hopefully I can get you guys access to some pretty sweet deals. I plan on aligning Chat with Traders with some really reputable and solid brands. I also plan on bringing on some people who might not be your typical traders. So maybe like some Bitcoin traders, people in like alternative markets. So I was kind of thinking maybe someone who's like professional in sports betting, someone who's a professional gambler. I don't know if a professional gambler would call themselves a gambler. I'm not sure.
The term sounds bad, but yeah, exactly. Somebody who makes their money by speculating in almost certainly a systematic, you know, very quantified fashion. Yeah,
because I think there's lessons that can be learned and applied to trading from those who aren't, you know, directly traders themselves. I mean, Jack Little, who was on the podcast a few weeks back, he was, or still is, a high-stakes poker player, as well as a trader. And I found it really interesting to hear about how he views at things like probabilistic outcomes. So yeah, I hope to bring on some guys who are, you know, not your typical traders, just to mix things up and keep things interesting. I'd want to bring on more guys who fly under the radar, who don't really have much of an online profile. Would be cool to hear from some guys who come from that side of things.
I know that's something that a lot of people would be interested to hear about. There are so many good traders who exist in the periphery of this business. I know we've talked about a couple of, like you were saying, the non-traditional, non-trader guys who might make it onto the podcast. And I know some of the guests that he's planning, guys. I can't say their names. Oh, my God, they're so good. You should definitely, you know, keep yourself keep your ears peeled.
Yeah, and I mean, something that you suggested might be interesting is maybe bringing someone on who might have the role of like a risk manager at like a prop firm, someone who might not directly trade themselves but is very active in a trading environment, who could give some good insight from that angle as well. So that's all things to look forward to. Hopefully, have some awesome guests on next year as well. So I can't believe how quick this year's flown by. I can't believe it's episode 50 already. It's been a fast year, that's for sure. So, Zach, let's wrap things up here. Where can listeners get in touch with you? So maybe share your Twitter, email, and web address.
Sure. So my Twitter handle is at Zach Hurwitz. That's ZACHHURWIT as in Tom, Z as in Zach. You can get me at email, which is tradingcoachz, all one word, no spaces, at gmail.com. You can also check out my website, thevwap.com, thevwap.com. You know, and also I think it's worth mentioning that I'm doing a bit of the coaching work through Chat with Traders. There's just such a phenomenal response. It is kind of, why didn't we do this sooner? And I've met so many good traders already through it. I'm excited for 2016.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, Zach. Well, so obviously Zach's offering the free 30-minute session that you can get with him. If you do decide to go past that, then you can just sign up at chatwithtraders.com/coaching and get a full session with him there, get one-on-one access, pretty sweet deal. If you guys want to get in touch with me for any reason, aaron@chatwithtraders.com is my email address. Obviously the website's chatwithtraders.com, and on Twitter, I try to be pretty active on Twitter at Chat with Traders. So you can reach me through any of those avenues. And guys, if you have any questions for either Zach or myself, maybe we missed something, just go to chatwithtraders.com/50, scroll to the bottom of the page, and just drop a comment or question in the comments area at the bottom of the page. And we'll be monitoring that very closely. Look forward to connecting more. All right, Zach, well, absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much for coming on. It's really appreciated. It's gone a bit longer than we expected, or kind of did expect, but it's been good, and I hope people have, you know, found some value from this discussion. Hope to have you on again very soon.
Absolutely, man. We'll have to talk in 2016 when I'm launching the site and the course. I was just going to say, on behalf of everyone who listens, thank you and congratulations on an awesome 50 episodes and 500,000 downloads. That's sweet, man. That's really impressive.
Much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Cool.
All right, Zach. Take care.
You too.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.